handle on my head here this morning about this, so we'll see where we go. Yeah.
Camelot. Well, maybe I should rename it to something else. What do you think?
I don't know. How about just how can we participate in healing the earth? I don't know. Because I don't know. Whatever you want.
How about fix or destroy the earth?
Yeah, that's a good one.
It leads in a lot of different directions.
Well, here's something I'll pop in. How fungi could save the world. Gonna pop this in.
Better show him I got the swing.
Well, did you know that fungi has the potential to save the world from humanity's worst excesses?
In our society, if there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here! Oh! How'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you. We're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they'd put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Do you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
If I were the devil, if I were the prince of darkness, I'd want to engulf the whole world in darkness, and I'd have a third of its real estate and four-fifths of its population, but I wouldn't be happy until I had seized the ripest apple on the tree, the... So I'd set about however necessary to take over the United States. I'd subvert the churches first. I'd begin with a campaign of whispers. With the wisdom of a serpent, I would whisper to you as I whispered to Eve. Do as you please. To the young, I would whisper that the Bible is a myth I would convince them that man created God instead of the other way around. I would confide that what's bad is good and what's good is square. And the old I would teach to pray after me, our Father, which art in Washington. And then I'd get organized. I'd educate authors in how to make lurid literature exciting so that anything else would appear dull and uninteresting. I'd threaten TV with dirtier movies and vice versa. I'd peddle narcotics to whom I could. I'd sell alcohol to ladies and gentlemen of distinction. I'd tranquilize the rest with pills. If I were the devil, I'd soon have families at war with themselves, churches at war with themselves, and nations at war with themselves until each in its turn was consumed. And with promises of higher ratings, I'd have mesmerizing media fanning the flames. If I were the devil, I would encourage schools to refine young intellects, but neglect to discipline emotions. Just let those run wild. Until before you knew it, you'd have to have drug-sniffing dogs and metal detectors at every schoolhouse door. Within a decade, I'd have prisons overflowing. I'd have judges promoting pornography. Soon I could evict God from the courthouse, then from the schoolhouse, and then from the houses of Congress. And in his own churches, I would substitute psychology for religion and deify science. I would lure priests and pastors into misusing boys and girls and church money. If I were the devil, I'd make the symbol of Easter an egg and the symbol of Christmas a bottle. If I were the devil, I'd take from those who have and give to those who want it until I had killed the incentive of the ambitious. And what'll you bet? I couldn't get whole states to promote gambling as the way to get rich. I would caution against extremes in hard work, in patriotism, in moral conduct. I would convince the young that marriage is old-fashioned, that swinging is more fun, that what you see on TV is the way to be. And thus I could undress you in public, and I could lure you into bed with diseases for which there is no cure. In other words, if I were the devil, I'd just keep right on doing what he's doing. Paul Harvey.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street singing songs and carrying signs, mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop now. What's that sound? Everybody look.
Says the turbo, and the
Hello, everybody. I'm gonna paint with a wide brush for a bit. We lived in a whole different time way back before all this stuff that we know as technology. We seem to have survived pretty good. I guess the longevity rate might not have been so well before we started learning about things and learning how to take care of one another. But earlier, technology got the better of me, so you might have heard me on there trying to talk about naming the show, because I actually left the lock talk mic on the deal so I could test to see if the microphone was on. I forgot to shut it off. Anyway, that's what happened on the intro. But back to the deal there. You know, way before the invention of the automobile and the steam engine and electricity and all the things that we take for granted today, there were people on the earth and they survived. They survived with the information that came down from generation to generation. Medicines and ways to help feed each other and what to eat and what not to eat and that kind of stuff. And we did all right. We weren't living like George Jetson or anything, but we did all right. And then along, time for the Industrial Revolution and everything, just kind of sped up. It just, like, if you look at technology increases rapidly, just almost like on an hourly basis anymore. And they say it's actually going to get even better whenever they finally get into the portion where artificial intelligence and quantum computing and all that is something that's mainstream, so to speak. So, you know, those times we're going to see a lot of interesting things. Probably could be a lot of disturbing things as well. It just kind of depends on how you look at it. So I think the ultimate thing is that nature itself is the best fixer of things, so to speak. My friend Steve, back in the day when he was helping me put ShazizRadio.com together, says, "Nature needs no improvement, only the arrogance of man requires change." And that's a pretty profound and true statement as far as I'm concerned. I mean, it's the truth. Arrogance of man. We've thought ourselves to be better than we are sometimes, and we thought ourselves to not be as good as we are sometimes. We're not trying to turn this into a bash session for humanity, because I'm part of humanity. I'm part of that family. Yes, I kind of really want to help us out a bit. You know, we're not as terrible as some people would like us to believe. Now, we have made a lot of poor choices throughout history, wars as being probably one of the biggest poor choices we ever made. We shouldn't have never went to war with one another, you know, and if you look back at all the reasoning behind going to war with one another, it was always so that we could go out and get, you know, resources or shiny things. Somebody had something we didn't need, that we thought we needed more than they needed. We thought there was more value on a person or on a thing than there was on the person. And so we did some terrible things as humanity. When I say I'm painting with a wide brush, because I'm talking about all of us. I'm not just talking about, you know, any particular group or individual or any story in history. I'm talking about humans, you know, since the day we started walking on this earth and doing what it is that humans do. For the most part, the average Joe just wants to have a family and live life and love and learn and prosper and do all the things that, you hear about, the good things in life. But as time goes on and technology gets more advanced and people start losing their connection to the earth and each other, and you get to the point where you got people sitting on one couch and people sitting on another couch, and they're texting each other across from the room instead of actually having a good old conversation. So technology could be a really serious hindrance. It could be a really serious blessing. It just depends on how we choose to use it. Now, like my friend Steve said, nature needs no improvement. Only the arrogance of man requires change. You hear old crazy hair Chaziz on here talking all about, we got every single piece of the puzzle necessary to resolve all the issues of this world if we only so choose to, enact those solutions. We can help nature do what nature does naturally by learning from nature on how nature actually does things to begin with. And there are research papers and videos and such out there of how to actually mimic what nature does. It's kind of what we talked about on the Mad Science Show yesterday, mimic nature. I just put a question mark behind everything. Comments are doggone titles of shows like that because it's a question. Honestly, we could do it. We probably should do it. But will we do it? Will we be able to inspire the hearts of the rest of our fellow brothers and sisters around the globe in order to try to come together and work on these things? Some folks think that we need this one world power structure that will just basically force everybody into compliance. And I don't believe that that's the way to go, because anytime you attempt to force anybody to do anything, it breeds hatred. It breeds... I can't even remember the words I'm trying to say. they just don't like it. It's as simple as that. It makes people angry. Nobody likes to be told what to do. But definitely nobody likes to be forced into doing things. It has to come somehow or another. I always say I don't understand why it takes a tragedy to bring men and women together as far as families go or the world or whatever. I don't understand why we got to wait to that point in order to do the things that we should have been doing that we knew was right in our hearts. We knew not to be throwing trash out the windows when we were using our technology to get from one place to the next. We knew not to dump things down there that would be harmful to the environment out there. We all knew that. And we knew there were certain things out there that just made absolutely no sense why you would want to go over and destroy another man's land just so that you could prove a point to him or under the guise of security or for whatever purpose. Most of us believe, and it probably is so, that most of the wars in this world are fought over resources. They're fought over oil at the moment, and they say that one day we might actually be going to war over fresh water, which to me is probably worse than the whole oil thing. Why would we go fight for something that the earth is three-quarters covered in? There's enough water on here, and water being the most stable molecule on the planet, it can't be destroyed. You can make a mess of it. You can get it dirty. But as far as the actual structure scientifically, it's not even possible to destroy water no matter what you do to it. It's not possible. There's some people out there that argue with me. Some people tell me how stupid I am because I'm saying to them that we can't never run out of water. And they're all like, well, that's fresh water, stupid. Well, what about those individuals over there at Dubai that have the huge desalination plants? They make fresh water by the thousands, if not millions of gallons. What about all the communities that have water treatment facilities throughout the entire country here in the United States alone? They know how to treat water. Now, sometimes their methods aren't probably agreeable. I mean, whether you're talking about fluoride in the water or chlorine or whatever, but there are other scientifically proven methods by which you can actually purify water, distillation being the simplest of them all. They've actually got what they call dehumidifiers that will pull water right out of the air because the hydrogen and oxygen floating around in the air, it's there. We're floating in a sea of water. We really are. And it's energy. All of this is energy. So we should not be sitting around talking about how we have an energy crisis. We shouldn't be talking about how anybody's going to die of thirst. And we definitely shouldn't have to be talking about how anybody's going to die of starvation, or overpopulation for that matter. If you truly believe that the world is overpopulated, you really bought into the scam. You really bought into the indoctrination or the training that they want to put in everybody's head. We got to get the population down to a reasonable control. No, folks, it's never been like that. Nature has always been in control, and if mankind ever got too many of mankind, it'd be just exactly like what you see in the wildlife portion of the deal. In wildlife, you know, if you get too many fish in one area, they will actually absorb all the oxygen, and a lot of those fish will die off, and the lucky ones will swim away. That's how nature is. It's sad but true. You see millions of fish die every year, some of which is a natural occurrence. You know, when you talk about the different types of red tide and green algaes and all that kind of stuff, some of which is natural methods by which nature actually cleans house. And some of it, you know, it's like I said, it's sad. It's sad to see how sometimes nature will clean things up. We have the knowledge and we have the capability. It's amazing all the things that we've learned throughout the generations of all of our lifetimes combined. We have so much information at our fingertips. My friend Steve always said, we got the vast sum of all man's knowledge at our fingertips. Now, I love Steve. I wish he was around more often. He's over in the Philippines helping some people out over there. But nonetheless, he always had inspiring words like that to say. And so, you know, that to me, that's the true portion of humanity, the brilliance of what we can actually do. Our main thing is that we got to get over ourselves and start understanding nature's really in charge, whether we like it or not. Now, if we do all these different environmental disasters, yeah, we're going to create some problems. I don't subscribe to the whole total extinction of the Earth. Unless something comes from outer space and blasts us and we ain't got no choice in the matter, in which case we're all in the same boat and we're all going together. So, you know, we'll hold hands and go off the cliff like Thelma and Louise. You know, I got better hopes for us for the future. Now, I think that maybe we could scorch the earth with nuclear wars, or, you know, even conventional wars for that matter. I don't think it's a good idea for people to be spraying crud into the air. I don't think it's a good idea to tamper with nature at all. But as far as our technology and what we could actually accomplish with said technology, if we learn to use this technology in harmonious manner, so to speak, with nature, then we ain't got no problems. We really don't have any problems. And there's enough earth on this place that we call home that we have, if we take care of our soils, if we take care of our plant lives and our wildlife, this system is amazing. It's a self-contained biosphere. It will continue to allow for plentiful food and water and everything and medicines that we need to survive. I feel like we're down here to learn something really profound, and I feel like that most of the people in the world have kind of gotten distracted away from our ultimate purpose in life. That's one of the questions that most people ask. What am I here for? What's it all about? You know, well, where did I come from? I feel like you come from a creator. That's what I believe. I believe this world was created. I believe it's an amazing work of art. It's a machine of epic proportions, even the human body. If you look at yourself, if you hold your hand out in front of your face and you move your fingers back and forth, then think about what all it took in order to build this thing that's called the human body. And to not only do that, but put in some sort of spirit that gives you individuality and life and love and everything that you enjoy about your being. It's amazing. I don't know how anybody could deny that as a creation, as opposed to just a sheer accident. for whatever purpose we got here, now that we are here and we're all in the same boat and we have all these trials and tribulations and plagues and famines and pestilence and wars and rumors of wars and all the things you hear about in the things that people, you know, fear the most. We can fix all of this. Every single bit of it. And I think the most part is going to start from some sort of, you know, spiritual grounding to get yourself where whatever you believe in to be your spiritual connection in the path that you want to walk in life. But to get there and be true and start looking around and understanding and seeing what nature has to offer to help us out that we can work with. We got so much potential. And I keep telling everybody, you're more powerful than you can possibly imagine, because just the words coming out of your mouth can make or break somebody's day. Words have actually started wars. Words have actually created peace. You know, in my book of faith that most people despise these days, it said, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be known as the children of God. And I think that's kind of cool. I kind of like to be known like that. As if nothing else, if I can at least walk that path, and if I can at least lead by example, and if I can at least do something, I'm humbled and honored to be a caretaker, a servant, because that's what families do. Families take care of each other. Families provide for one another. They protect one another. And I just can't say enough good things about family. Of course, you got all your obnoxious cousins and uncles and brothers that do things that drive you insane. That's family portion of life too. It's like, you know, it's part of the experience, I guess. There are technologies out there that can fix this world. Now, none of these technologies is going to be as good as nature, with the exception of maybe some of the ones that try to mimic nature as best as possible. But there are technologies available. And we've seen throughout the history of time, there are definitely technologies to help destroy it all. But that's not the route I think we all want to go. I think what we want to do is to lay down some really smooth paving stones, the best that we can do, so that the future generations that walk that path can have a little bit smoother ride than we had, a little bit smoother travel, or whatever. So that when they look back at us, they don't look back at us in disgust. I kind of like my future grandchildren and their grandchildren to look back and say, I loved old Grandpa. He was a pretty good guy. If that's the impression that I can put on the heart of another good soul, then that's the impression that I want to work for. That's what I strive for. That's what I strive for this world out here. They say there's almost 9 billion people on the planet. Some people say it's 7 billion. I don't know. It's a lot of people. And we're nowhere near overpopulated. We got everything we need to feed and house and clothe and give medicine to every single individual living on this planet. We've got everything we need to take care of all of our wildlife. We might need to re-engineer a few things to give the animals a safe path across the street, as opposed to, you know, the alternative where, you know, some individuals just kind of drive right on by like it ain't no thing. Saddens my heart when I drive down the road and I see an animal that didn't make it across the road. Saddens my heart when I think about humanity not making it across the road. We can fix this thing. But we gotta make a choice. We gotta make a choice here today and every day from thereafter. The question is, fix or destroy the world? Because it is ultimately up to us. Hi Barbara, are you still there?
Hey everybody, I'm still here, and I'm glad to be here, of course. Thank you everybody for showing up this morning. Lots of things you're bringing out there, and yeah, I have my feelings about technology. I know there are definitely, in this day and age, technologies have, I guess you could say, advanced us into certain areas or certain ways, some for the good and certainly some not so good. I think that's what we're more, of course, concerned about. You know, I tend to feel that before the technology or the rise of technology, all people, you know, and by the way, you speak about family. I think you're speaking about your immediate family, you know, your cousins, your brothers, your aunties and uncles and sisters and all, so on, and the ones that are, you know, off track or, I guess you could say, the black sheep or, you know, sometimes it's good to be a black sheep. But I'm thinking of the family, the big family, the human family. That's when I think about that. Because not to just isolate ourselves with our kind of like our little immediate family, and because we're all connected as family, everyone, black, red, yellow, white, and brown. Now people are, you know, coming to be one. You know, I think in the future there won't be any distinction between skin color. I think they're going to be moving into, you know, just people, humans, not defined by color of skin, because there won't be any differences, you know. That's just my kind of thinking. But I'm thinking about the original family of the earth and before technology. You know, I feel, and I've said this so many times, that the earth, the Mother Earth, was created to give us everything that we need. Everything. Medicines, clean water, fruits and, you know, and nuts and nurturances, everything that we needed. That's the way the original people throughout the whole of the earth lived. They gathered and they hunted and they were given things, gifted things from this earth, the abundance of things. To shelter us, feed us, nurture us, and heal us. This is the way of the creation. You know, I often kind of like saying, I know this is sort of a way fantasy kind of thing, is that how would we be today if we didn't have these technologies? We'd still be going out to the earth looking for the medicines that our ancestors told us about. You know, and we'd have clean water. You know, nobody would be getting sick from the water. You know, we would have all the medicines that we needed, even those that cured cancers and whatevers. Not that those were very prevalent before technology, because I think the advancements has put us in a system where we are subjected to intrusive things and technologies that really do more harm, not only to us, but to the earth and these natural things like water, air, food, the earth itself. You know, we know that the earth in many places is depleted of its nutrients because of the, you know, the processes of technology, you know. So I'm kind of ambivalent about the technology. Now, I wouldn't be able to be talking to you here and all people on people, you know, people for people and out there and communicating with people on the other side of the world if there wasn't this technology. But then you have the, you know, there are side effects of all technology, positive and good, just like there is in nature. You know, with a healing plant, it's known that next to it is often a plant that might make you sick. It may appear like the medicine, but in fact it is not the medicine. Or you have, like, say, poison ivy. Next to poison ivy is always a jewel weed, which heals poison ivy or nurtures the effects of poison ivy. So nature set it up like this. And I think that people are so reliant on technology and have forgotten their connectedness to the earth. And that's one thing that I feel is not good about technology, because people are not connected to their fundamental nature or their original connectedness to the healing aspects of the Mother Earth. Now, I'm not talking particularly about a medicine out there, although there are numerous medicines right outside. I'm talking about just the frequency of the mother, the energy of the mother, the energy of a forest, the energy of a tree, the sound and nurturing soothness, you know, of water. These are all natural remedies and creating harmony and balance, not only in the system, but within us. We are part of the system. So our connectedness to the earth is so key, so crucial. And, you know, so we have this, there were studies done about people spending time. There's always studies, you know, there has to be studies done on everything to prove what many of us or some of us have known forever, or have been given this by our ancestors, the information of if you go to the forest, go to the trees, go to the water, and spend time, something starts to happen to you. You start to calm down, you start to take some nice breaths, you start looking around, you start feeling differently. Something starts to occur, because we are in our natural environment from whence we came.
I can testify to that, because when me and my wife go out to her mother and father's house, they live several hours away from us, a couple hours anyway, but it seems like the further we get away from the city, the more happy we become with one another. It's like when we get towards the city, I don't know if it's because of all the, you know, the fast pace, or you know, when you're in the city, you just don't have time to slow down or anything, to do anything. You're always rushing and all that kind of stuff. But when we get out there far away from all the radio signals and all the distractions like TV and all that, we start to respond to each other in a really happy way, because out there where they're at, they don't have near the technology going on out there, if you understand what I'm saying. They live in the country.
Yeah. I do. I mean, I have that. I experience that when I go to the city, and it's a small city, actually. It's not like Manhattan or, you know, Paris or anything, but I feel the difference. I start to feel the shift. And, of course, we're talking energy and frequency. That's what we have to keep remembering, that this is part of who we are. An energy and frequency, and we are inundated with all types of energies and frequencies, some positive, some negative, some harmonized, some disharmony, and in balance or out of balance. So this is what our life is consists of. So when I go to those places, you know, I notice the difference, and when I come back to my home here at Owl Ridge, 103 acres of forest on this mountain, I just feel the difference. It's like, you know, it's like a sanctuary, and I think wherever we are, we have to consider how can we make or create where we are our personal sanctuary. And even if you live in the city, you can do that in your own apartment or home or environment, and certainly in the city there are some green places there, you know, little parks and so on. But I think we have to make this effort, because I think in order to shift and heal and change things and create a harmony in our surroundings, we must start with ourselves first, you know. And certainly I know technology is essential. As I said, I wouldn't be talking with you here unless this internet, I wasn't hooked into the internet. And when I say intern means, well, they intern somebody in a tomb when they're dead. And a net is when you capture your prey. So the word internet is kind of interesting to me, because we can be caught in this technology. We can be, I guess you'd say on some level mind controlled. It's sort of an addictive technology. It's good. It connects us and to the world, but it also can capture us and be addictive, as a lot of technologies can, like, you know, like pharmaceuticals or pills or the whatever. So the technologies are either be used positively or can affect us negatively. I think we have to be more aware and alert of these technologies. So getting back to, you know, our fundamental nature is part of nature, okay? Originally, all the peoples, black, red, yellow, and white, all tribal people were connected to the earth more so, because there was no technology. You had to be aware, you had to be connected and listen and be alert to various signs and signals, people received guidance from, for instance, the plant medicines. I think it's kind of humorous when the scientists speak about ancient cultures and they discern in their way how people found a healing medicine or a healing plant. And of course, you don't know if that plant is going to heal you or kill you. So they kind of decided that the ancient people must have, you know, in their trying to find the healing plant, might have, you know, killed a lot of people trying to find the right plant.
Trial and error.
Yeah, but that's not how it works. You see, if you understand or know about the wisdoms and the way of the ancient people, and of course this is a stretch for the scientific mind, that these plants have a spirit. All things have a spirit within them. Well, what does that mean? That means that it is an intelligence. And the intelligence within these plants, the spiritual aspect of that, has an energy or a frequency, and it will also communicate with you. And this is the ability to be able to sit with a plant and go into, let's say, your heart spirit, or however a person would do it. I just use the term heart spirit. You could say, well, being one with, or meditating, or silencing your monkey mind. But to be with the energy and frequency and open yourself to the spirit, to speak to that spirit yourself to begin with, because that's what the ancient people did. They would speak to the spirit of a plant. And we have our ways to do that. First, we make an offering to feed that spirit, and an offering in our way is often a sacred tobacco. We give a little pinch of the sacred tobacco. We put it on the ground near that plant. Now, there's always a chief, or the head of the plant kingdom. In that particular plant kingdom, there is a chief, we call it. And you would go to that. You would discern which one would be the one to speak to. And you would ask for permission. And first of all, you would ask if this plant is a helper, healer, or whatever. So you would find that information. You would be given that information on how to use that plant. And there are other ways, too. What we call, for instance, a vision, or a vision quest, or even in the dream time. If you hold a plant, for instance, if you're not sure about this plant, but you ask, you know, for permission to take a part of that plant, and then you go into dream time with it, that plant, the spirit of that plant, will guide you and help you to know how to use that plant, what this property is, if it is healing, or whatever. But this is the way the ancient people functioned in their relationship, their fundamental nature to nature, a complete oneness and connectedness to the spirit around them. In that communication, they received guidance of where the plants were, how to use these plants, what the properties were, and so on. They didn't just go around here, take this plant, and if you die, well, that's not the one we're going to use. You know, I mean, that's just not how it worked. So what I'm saying is it's pretty miraculous how we had been gifted this earth, and how our connectedness, all of human connectedness, was on that level, which is a spiritual relationship to creation. And spiritual relationship means making relation to the spirit within all of nature, not only with your own self, because we say, you know, there is a spirit embodied within each of us, which is, you know, which is a whole other I guess you'd say very significant to know that spirit within you. It's a whole other experience when you connect with it. But the spirit within all of life, all of creation, is basically available for us and will teach us. Nature, all of nature, all of creation was the original teacher for the people, meaning they learned how to heal themselves. They learned where the best foods were, and the times of the movements of the creatures and animals. There was communication there. I call that spiritual relationship. This is the way we all functioned, all of our ancestors, before technology came in. And I think technology has disrupted our connection, our spiritual connection, not only to ourselves, but to all of creation, our original essence, and our original instructions to be able to listen, to become one with, to make that relationship with the teachers of in nature. So I think we have solutions, as we're talking about how to heal the world, and I said to you, if we stopped messing with things, the Mother Earth would heal herself. She has that capacity. Of course, we're pressuring and pushing and increasing our, our, let's say, the technology upon the Mother Earth, which is ever more increasing a stress upon her. But she's a fighter, and so sometimes technology is good, but it also is damaging. What we need is balance. We need to find a balance, okay? And when you have people like scientists and maybe other people who, I don't know what it is about them. They can't seem to stop. I don't know what to call it. The more I see these scientists doing this study on this, on how to, you know, find the God particle, or how to blow a hole in the veil and open up to the demons, or do this, I just shake my head. I just don't understand these people. They can't seem to stop themselves from, you know, going into places where I feel we don't belong. You know, nature, original in its creation, was harmonious and functioned perfectly and beautifully, just like we were perfectly beautiful and harmonious. And Creator gave us the medicines and the help that we would need. And so I think that we have many things. You know, I'm looking at the not a technology, and I know there are numerous technologies of how to clean this up, how to clean that up, and so on, which is good. But I'm looking at nature's original technology. So, for instance, like the fungi. I popped a few links into the chat about this extraordinary healer that is original to creation, and it still exists. And these are called superheroes, you know, which powers basically range from fighting cancer to cleaning up pollution. And that's the humble fungi, you know. And we have to, I think, go back to looking at these things. And there are people who are doing studies on this. Using the fungi to heal not only cancer, and certainly there are cultures like the ancient Chinese. This is one of their medicines, is the fungi. So, you know, it's like the, mushrooms, fungi. But there is a system beneath the earth. And I was talking the other day on the round table to Star about the web, the sacred web of life, and that this is a system that the earth has, the Mother Earth has, and it's her ley lines, or we call it the web, but it is the life force of the mother that runs through this system, these webs, and it's like the flow of energy or life force moves through this web, just like it does in the human body, that sends the chi through our bodies, which is, of course, noted in ancient Chinese medicine. But now we have this web of the mycelia that runs for, you know, thousands and thousands of miles throughout this beneath the earth. And it's all in communication. These microbes and protozoas, and these are extraordinary. It's the largest living organism, by the way. Largest living organism on the planet is a single fungus. It's called the Amillaria, known as the honey fungus. Okay, because it tastes sweet. But it starts in the mountains, the Blue Mountains region of Oregon in America. And guess how much this weighs? 22,000 pounds. It is spread over a remarkable 2.4 miles. But you have this type of fungi that lives everywhere, in water, on trees, in the soil, and in the air, and in our bodies. So these tiny microscopic organisms, including fungi that live on our own skin and in our gut, you know, are important and essential to our health. So this is what I'm looking at, you know, is let us pay more attention to this natural medicine. And the earth, the Mother Earth, this is her life blood. This is her life system of communication throughout the whole of the earth. And yes, these organisms, these fungi, can heal cancer and clean up pollution and oil spills and so on and so forth. So this is what I'm looking at. You know, it's like this is the immune system of the Mother Earth. And so, again, technology will go in there with a big machine and start blowing up or digging into the immune system of the mother. You see?
Yeah, I did a video quite some time about duckweed and watermill. When I very first started looking into it, because I have these ponds and I like these ponds to look beautiful, well, they were all green and, you know, had these little plants on there, and the doggone, it just blocked out the sunlight and all this kind of stuff. And so I started doing some research into this actual stuff to try to figure out how to get rid of it. My initial intentions were to get rid of all of it, destroy it, right? Well, when I found out what this stuff could actually be used for, I mean, it had multiple purposes. Not only would it be good fish food, but fertilizer, it's water's nature's water filtration system. And the whole entire research, the story of what I came up with on that thing was basically mind-blowing, because what happens is, when the farmer's out there fertilizing his ground using different types of fertilizers and manure and stuff like that, you know, to get his soil all rich, well, that, when it rains, washes down into the waterways and makes that waterway so incredibly nutrient-rich that it throws that natural pond off of balance. So if there's any kind of algaes or watermill or duckweed that's in that pond, it will automatically go to work. Nature will already start cleaning it up. But every year you'll note that it gets thicker and thicker, because this stuff is, it's the water is so nutrient rich and out of balance that it just grows like wildfire. And when I realized that if you worked in harmony with nature, if the farmer would understand what he was doing to the waterways down the stream from where he's actually, you know, doing his growing and stuff, he could benefit from what nature's already provided by, you know, basically running some water off into, you know, his own ditches that he dug or whatever, and setting it up so that any fertilizers that are used that year would basically be absorbed into those plants, and then he could harvest those plants and next year basically recycle last year's fertilizer, and then from that point on only use natural fertilizers, which eventually nature would be able to catch back up and all the ponds would be beautiful again. You know, it breaks down the whole natural cycle of things whenever you can't get no sunlight to the bottom of the pond. And between that and the way that nature already breaks down leaves and anything that blows into the pond, or even fish that die or whatever, the water will become still and stagnant, and the only things that live in there is creepy things, you know, like leeches or whatever.
and leeches serve a purpose too.
Yeah, but I don't want them on my face.
No, I don't either, but if you have gangrene, those leeches will clean out that gangrene.
It's not a
pretty picture.
They used to use leeches in the old days in the old doctrine to suck out the poisons and stuff that were, you know, in the
infection. They use it today. Yeah. They are still doing that.
They even use flies. It's nasty to think about, but they use, they call them, oh, doggone it, they're grown in a clean environment, sterile, you know, environment. So these flies, they put...
They're special ops.
Yeah, they're little maggots, little babies that go in there, and they'll eat out the rotten portions of a person's wound. And
yes.
Yeah.
That's nature.
It's disgusting,
yeah.
But...
Well, you know, I'm going to just continue here with this, because this is so... People don't realize that the fungi on the trees, for instance, or in the earth or whatever, everywhere, okay, they're like biochemical weapons against smallpox and anthrax. You know, these are larciformes, officinalis. They're found on larch trees and various other trees. And, you know, they are resistant to influenza viruses, you know. So this is quite fascinating. But then you have this, through native Europe and North America, this fungus is becoming increasingly rare, okay, because of what's happening to the trees. Technology is killing the trees. So there's that, you know.
Yeah.
So the job... The primary job, in other words, nature's creation for fungi is to sustain the natural world. And that we are included in that, along with this, you know, the bacteria, fungi are basically decomposers in the soil for the, you know, in the food web and feeds everything. And, you know, it says here the fungi could help to save our world from pollution. Because certain species, such as the oyster mushroom, which, by the way, I love the oyster mushroom. I make a broth with the oyster mushroom. It produces enzymes that digest the hydrocarbons in petroleum. Some can absorb heavy metals like mercury and even digest polyurethane plastics. So scientists are experimenting to see if certain types of fungi might be able to absorb radiation after nuclear disasters. And I think you were talking about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, on the show yesterday.
Yeah.
So, but these are natural healers. So we have nuclear disasters that is a technology of man that has created a disaster. And then you have in the creation of the earth and creation of life, solutions. So, you have to think about that. So, there was never nuclear disasters prior to human technology, but yet the earth was created, and these fungi and various other things were also created, originally to deal with nuclear disasters,
well,
plus
yeah,
many other...
natural radiations in the ground, you know, that's where they get uranium. It's just that we take these, what would normally be natural, and we combine them together, you know, into really hot radioactive rods in order to boil water, which is ridiculous, but...
Well, we're messing with nature. We're messing with the original system of nature that was in harmony and balance, as we as humans were also that... in that way because of our relationship to creation. Yeah. And without the intrusions of pollutions, you know, and pesticides and, you know, additives to our foods and so on, and the so-called pharmaceuticals that are supposed to help do more harm in most cases. And so nature has all the answers. We do not need, in my humble opinion, more technology.
You know what I'd like to see? I'd like to see a side-by-side comparison of all the natural remedies that people know about, you know, like plants or whatever, side-by-side with all the known pharmaceutical, side effects.
Well,
I was watching
a
commercial yesterday about it.
All right, when you have a pharmaceutical... you have a ton of tiny, you know, remarks of warnings of side effects.
Yeah,
right?
A whole list of it.
And often those side effects are somewhat even like what you're dealing with to begin with, or worse.
Yeah, not excluding death.
It's that too. So, this is not about doom and gloom. We are at risk, of course. You know, and the main theme, like we have this main theme of the Davos, the gatherings at Davos, the World Economic Forum, you know, is about the role of technology in solving the world's biggest problems. But see, there you go again. Man's mind, not nature's, you see. If they would turn to nature and listen and be attentive to the ways that nature already has the solutions for everything. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I agree.
Now you have, you know, our one of our the worst technologies, you know, is Monsanto's pesticides, right?
Yeah.
You know, I don't get this at all. But, of course, I shouldn't say I don't get it, because it's about greed. You have people in these think tanks coming along, sitting down together, figuring, how can we make a lot of money for this company? That's the basis of everything they do, is greed, is money. How can we get more money? How can we make more money for this company that just hired us? No matter what, we want to get money. They need money, so let's do whatever we can, regardless of side effects or repercussive actions or whatever. They don't even consider this at all. It's just about how can we make money. So you have pesticides being sprayed on all of our food, and we know, you know, this is creating sickness, not only in humans, but the plant itself, and the earth, and the water, because there's runoff, and the air. This is bad news, people. This is not good technology to keep away little bugs that have a purpose. You know, whatever they're saying, you know, nature balances itself. The ancient people never used pesticides. They had natural pesticides. There aren't, even today, natural pesticides. They are not disruptive or poisonous. They are nature's pesticides, okay? Now, you have organic farmers, you know, and they are using this successfully and so on. But if you have an organic farmer, you know, several miles away from a farmer who uses pesticides, well, sure enough, that spray and whatever's, you know, thrown on the land to poison it and poison the food drifts over to the organic farm and pollutes everything around it. But you have nature. Mother Nature is extraordinary. So Monsanto had an issue. They had a big problem a couple years ago. I read this article where they, one of their pesticides, or their main pesticide, was being challenged by what was called a super plant. You know, it was to them something invasive that wasn't being affected, or a super bug wasn't being affected by their pesticide. Okay, it was didn't bother it at all. And I was saying, well, that's interesting, because now that tells me Mother Earth is fighting back. She's created and manifested something that can actually withstand this horrific pesticide that Monsanto had come up with to kill everything. Well, guess what they said? They didn't say, wow, this is interesting. What's really going on here? No, they said, we have to come up with a stronger pesticide to now take out that superbug that isn't dying because of the first pesticide that we put out. That's the insanity of technology. And greed, of course, to me, that's the whole basis of what we're talking about here.
Well, there's a, I think it's called barley straw, is a natural algae deal for getting rid of algae in your ponds. I'm trying to double check that, look it up. I think it was barley straw. Barley extract is, you can actually buy it. It's a natural herbicide for algae or whatever. But instead, they'll go out and buy these regular chemical algaecides that basically throw the doggone ponds or whatever off balance. And it just, nature has a way of making things immune over a period of time, so they got to come up with a stronger one every single time when they're trying to do something with chemicals and synthetic. And how far can you actually take it before you get one, what you talked about a minute ago, about the super invasive plant, you know? You see what I'm trying to say here?
Yes, I do. And, you know, the thing is these people will not quit, because it's about money.
Yep.
These people will not step back. They will not awaken to what is really necessary. It's like we need a cultural revolution in the way we connect with the planet, frankly. And these people will never do that. So here's a quote from Marco Lambertini of the World Economic Forum, and he says, "No human technology can replace nature's technology, which has been perfected over hundreds of millions of years to sustain life on Earth." Life, that's us, folks. And all other life.
It was barley straw.
I agree with this. And I have to clarify. I know that there is technology today that has, you know, helped people and perhaps even saved the lives of people, but we also see technology that is killing people.
Yeah. It was barley straw. Barley straw.
Yeah, barley straw. Well, there's so many, like I'm saying, it's present. It's there. It's been there. You know? We have every day new evidence of humans' unsustainable impact on our environment. Every day there's new evidence. You know, so we're talking the deadly extreme weather, stabilizing climate. You know, we've seen the warmest five-year period on record. The Arctic warmed much faster. But then I'm saying all this stuff, and I don't even know if it's true. Okay, because today we know that there are certain manipulations, you know, frequency waves and messing with everything out there. Again, technology that is actually corrupting our weather deliberately. We have mind control technology. We have various, you know, I just found out, this is mind-blowing to me, Shaziz. Did you know that fentanyl is actually used in the MK Ultra process of mind control?
Wouldn't surprise me any.
Well, I just found that out, and that makes, you know what? That actually answered some questions or some assessments that I have had about people's behavior, the extreme behavior that I have talking about that will stun you. You know, I was told in that prophecy given to me years ago that you will see chaos rising and you will see behaviors of people that will stun you and shock you, and that is happening. And it makes perfect sense to me now, this fentanyl, you know, the rise of this fentanyl and how people are dying from it, but also they can be mind controlled and affected by various frequency waves, you know, or even that sign, that billboard sign that you always talk about.
Yeah, that's crazy. But, you know, I don't want to fear technology. I like what we're doing here is we're able to, you know, reach across international bounds and talk to each other. But my whole point of view is that we should take this technology right now. Right, you showed me this deal about the Chinese scientists that found a fungi, and you talked about it as well, that, you know, would, you know, help to save the planet and clean up a rubbish dump in Pakistan. I look at that right there, that trash, as a resource that you wouldn't have to go out and pick up what you used to make that before. You could reuse that material just like nature does. Nature reuses everything. There's nothing.
Well, look at what you're saying. This is, to me, awesome and ironic. Now, you have, I'm going to go through this. You have in China, okay, they have identified a fungus that can break down plastics within a dump filled with plastic. What do you think nature is doing there?
Yeah.
Nature, the natural way of nature, can fix itself, you know, even though we, you know, there's tons and tons and tons of plastic here in this pile in China and trash. And within this, guess what starts to grow? Guess who's activated? The Mother Earth and nature, because there's an intelligence there that is beyond our imagining, you see. Now, I'm not saying to fear technology, not at all, you know, absolutely, because I don't fear technology, only when it's in the wrong hands. What are you looking for?
Here's some crackers.
Oh, thank you. My grandson is here to give me some treats. Thank you. You know what I'm saying? I'm not telling people to fear technology. I'm just describing how out of balance certain technologies have become and how destructive they have become. Like, yep. I say, I wouldn't be talking to you. I would never have met you. I wouldn't be here with the People on People for People if I weren't sitting in front of this machine here, this technology. But I have to be careful of this because it is addictive and various other radioactive waves are in everything, seems to be.
Oh, yeah.
I'm, yeah.
Well, I get it. I get it. That's Without the technology that we've got right now, we wouldn't have been able to know half of the things that we've talked to everybody about. The research capabilities of being able to get on there and look up to see papers and research and studies that other people have done and bring that to the forefront, because, you know, you got a lot of crummy technology out there. You got a lot of, you know, basically non-scientific kind of craziness going on out there that basically would slow you down when you're trying to resolve a problem. But right here, when you're talking about how there's an actual, they've actually found a fungus that will break this stuff down naturally, that's a plus right there. Not only can we use this as a resource, but we could also use it, you know, if we need to get rid of it and send it back to nature, we can send it back to nature like it was meant to be to begin with. You see what I mean there?
Well, this fungus is able to, think of this, this fungus that grew naturally in this dump with filled with plastics is able to break down waste plastics in a matter of weeks that would otherwise persist in the environment for years. It's called Aspergillus tubinogenesis, and it's typically found in soil, but the study found that it can also thrive on the surface of plastics. It secretes enzymes which break down the bonds between individual molecules and then use its mycelia to break them apart. So here's the thing, nature versus technology, man's technology. We know, okay, as deforestation and other human activity continue to destroy habitats, we might never gain access to these species, these fungi that are found throughout the whole of the world. So they actually, this one awesome fungi was found on a rubbish dump in Pakistan. So what I'm saying is we need to find a balance.
Yeah.
And you know what? If you're not thinking of nature, if you're not including nature in your conscious thinking or your relationship as a scientist or as people, we're missing a major point here, a major helper, something so significant that is part of us.
Because they would basically go right straight to chemistry on how, you know, to break things down chemically, which now you're talking about some sort of synthetic solution where now you just bypass a whole natural solution. That's what I've been trying to tell people for a long time, was that, you know, these people would come out there and say, oh, well, this plastic's going to be in the dump for thousands of years. It's not. It really is not going to be in the dump for thousands of years. I go out metal detecting all the time, and as I come across old bread wrappers and stuff like that, you can see they're clearly deteriorated. They're breaking down. Everything that goes into the ground basically becomes back to part of that ground. There's so much chemistry going on, natural chemistry going on in the soil, that it's mind-blowing. And even to the extent where when people go out there to mow their lawn, you know, I never rake up the grass clippings. I leave them lay and I let them do what nature normally does with grass clippings. People don't want to see that on their lawn, so they'll rake them up, and then they got to try to find a place to put it. You know, so, and there's a lot of, you know, like the garbage men, whatever, they won't pick up yard refuge. They only pick up trash, you know, the regular household trash. They won't pick up that. That's because it fills the landfills up quickly, and if people would have just let nature do what nature does naturally, those grass clippings actually turn into fresh soil and fertilizer. What do you think?
So I was muted. I think that that's wise, because I think that that's just allowing nature to do its thing. I see people using these leaf blowers, you know, to blow everything spick and span, and throwing those leaves out into the yard, or in the road, or putting them in bags and sending them off to the, you know, whatevers. This is nature's medicine. You know, my daughter is researching some of the ways to better plant, and the natural ways of the ancient people to plant, and was looking at the Hopi talk of the Hopi and how they grow their corn. You know, they live in an arid area there in Arizona. There's no rain there. And they have, over thousands of years, you know, created this, their corn species that is pretty extraordinary. And they talk, of course, they talk about the spirit in the plant of the corn. They call it the, you know, the mother, that spirit of the corn. And they don't use any additives at all to the arid ground. They don't even water. They don't have the water. They just rely upon the atmosphere. And they have corn, beautiful corn, healthy corn. It's one of the high. It has one of the highest properties of, you know, of nutrients. Their corn against any other corn that has been a study done, any other corn grown, even organic farmers or whatever. The Hopi corn has the highest nutrients, and they don't add, there's no additives, no manures, no pesticides, nothing. They just, with a prayer, put that little corn seed, which they have saved, by the way, hundreds of years of saving their own seed of corn. And they put that corn in the ground, right? And it becomes fruitful and feeds the nations with nothing added, nothing. Now, you have to think about that, and I was thinking about that because we're working here to feed ourselves. We have a big garden, and we've been here almost, 5 years now, and we have a big garden working to feed ourselves and become off-grid and completely self-sustainable. And, you know, we do say our prayers. We do say a prayer to the earth and the garden and over the seed and everything, but I was thinking, okay, we need to go a little deeper here because if you take... Unless you have seeds that you have saved for hundreds of years, like the Hopi, what you are doing, and we're doing this too, we are buying seeds from outside of our land here, from other companies, Seed Savers, for instance. And they could be heirloom seeds, true. They could be, you know, organic seeds, true. But these seeds are coming here from outside another place on someone else's land. And there's a spirit in that seed. Do you have something to say?
No, I'm just listening.
So thinking about this, if we want to understand nature and our relationship to nature, I believe the first thing that we need to do is recognize that there is a spirit within all things, within every part of nature. Every plant, every tree, even the water and even the stone has a spirit within it. An intelligence, that means, okay? Now, if we are bringing seed in, I said to my daughter, if we are bringing seed from a company that appears to, you know, be doing things in a good way, these could be Seed Savers, they could be heirloom seeds, they could be organic, coming from an organic place, we are still bringing this seed into our land here, okay? And we need to work with the spirit of that seed into the spirit of this land and the earth where we are going to plant that and communicate on that level of introduction and gratitude to that seed, the spirit of that seed. In other words, it's like bringing a new puppy into the household where there's a dog, a mature dog. You introduce them, or cats, right? You know, if you have a cat, you're bringing another cat in. You introduce them, all right? Just the same thing with people. You bring somebody into your family or into your environment, you introduce them and you welcome them and you show your care and your gratitude for that person's presence and so on. So that's the same type of thing I'm talking about, is our awareness of the spirit within everything. The seeds that you get to plant, that you buy from outside, it's sort of like recognize and identify the spirit within that. And how would you treat that new spirit or that new, you know, presence onto the land or into the garden that you have been cultivating all along? So this is just going deeper in our understanding of our relationship to the spirit in all of nature. And how do we treat nature? How do we treat the seeds? How do we treat the spirit of the tree or the spirit that is all around us? The same way, how do we treat people? There is a spirit embodied within them, you see.
Yep.
So you have there's a, to me, there's a, missing piece here in our scientific, you know, world and our technological world. What are the repercussions that if I create this, if I create artificial intelligence, are there repercussions? What are the repercussions? What are the possible repercussions of this machine, of this technology, of this radiation, of this treatment?
I see doomsday when you talk about artificial intelligence, because, you know, I guess because I've seen all the sci-fi movies where eventually, you know, if you look at, if you actually listen to the environmentalists and anti-war people and all those people out there talking about how terrible man is, then, you know, if you was an artificial intelligence with the sole task to help man to become better or to make the world a better place or whatever, eventually you get smart enough to come to the conclusion that man is the problem. You know, not that we aren't capable of solving it, but our track record stinks because we've been warring for who knows how many years just here in the United States. We've been in some sort of perpetual war around the world, and it's, you know, it's taken its toll on everything. It's taken its toll on the world. But, you know, looking from the eyes of an artificial intelligence, which now is tasked to saving the planet, the best way to save the planet would be to get rid of us. And, you know, I watched a video just like that. And before it was all said and done, this artificial intelligence basically nuked the entire planet and killed off, you know, all these people on the planet. And one lady who was there as a scientist actually helped this process before she realized what the artificial intelligence plan was to get rid of people. And then he digitized her brain, and basically she was no longer, you know, a part of the human race. And that apparently this particular alien race had done this to a whole bunch of other people just like her. People that it believed that would actually, you know, create a better world somewhere else. So humanity got erased. So if we're either going to use our technology to erase ourselves, or we're going to let our technology get out of hand to the point where it erases us for us. And either one isn't a good deal. Especially when we're sitting here right now, like I keep saying, we're sitting at a crossroads where we have access to all this knowledge. We know what nature does because we've seen all the research and all the studies. And if instead of allowing all these companies to keep on doing what they're doing, we start being, you know, proactive, not as some sort of environmental terrorist or anything like that, but some sort of, you know, person that when you talk about saving the environment, you're not being a hypocrite standing out there with a wooden stick and a paper sign. You're actually out there planting fresh trees, and you're helping to clean things up. You're being a good caretaker. And as far as the whole, you know, feeding the planet, nature's provided so much. You just said so about the way that the corn is planted, that it produces an abundance. And it's amazing how there are so many plants that are you know, good for people, that if you look at all the fruits or vegetables, whichever ones, that either have a bud or a seed in them, where, like, if you could take one rotten potato and grow five good potatoes. You can take one apple, and out of that apple, how many ever seeds is in there, grow that many more trees. So nature not only provided the means for food, but it also provided the seeds to grow an abundance of food. You see what I'm saying here?
I do, and what comes to my mind is that, and prove me wrong, I don't know, that technology today is stems from greed.
Yeah.
Mostly it stems from greed. And when you have that, if that's your focus, if that's your goal, what can I create and manifest here that will bring more money to those that have hired me, or to our company, or to my family, or whatever? They are not thinking of the benefits, or the repercussions, and they are certainly not thinking of anything spiritual, and they are not thinking of nature as a living being.
Well, there's a
point. They are thinking of exploitation. That's what they're thinking of. Exploit, exploit, exploit the resources. And this is where we are today because, you know, with all the things, and I'm going to say this because this is where we are today. With all the things that is going on in our world today, I don't think there's any country that has put the brakes on and sat people down, the scientists or whatever, or corporations, to say, look, people, we have to stop. We have to stop creating and manifesting things here for the good of a few, for their pockets, and think of the whole, the good of the whole, because that's we're all related, and there is a spirit here, out here on this earth. Nature has given us everything we need, so I don't see that ever happening. But we, the people, have that ability by what we're talking about now. We're talking and sharing information about who we really are and how we are so connected, not only to the earth and to all of life, but to each other. You know, we have been separated deliberately. You know, your color is different than mine, your religion is different than mine, mine's better than yours, and this is like a complete madness. And energetically, this is so disruptive and corruptive to harmony and balance. To the original nature of things, creation was harmony and balance, and everything we ever needed was created and manifested for us. We just had to listen. We just had to pay attention and become one with and be in relationship to this creation. We are not even in relationship with each other. We're adverse to each other, fighting each other, screaming at each other, while the chemical companies and all the other things and those in charge, the authorities, are doing their thing. We're all just distracted and screaming and yelling at each other when we are in serious trouble, and the ones in charge, the authorities, have not our best interest at heart. I'm sorry, I don't care who you are. Now, I'm going to talk about President Trump. Now, President Trump, if you're looking in the right places, you will see the good things that he has done in relation to sex trafficking and his push to end fentanyl, and so on and so forth, the fentanyl epidemic. And by the way, the people who created fentanyl, this family, they are on trial right now. Yay. And I hope that they get their due. And with all that they knew about fentanyl and how it is addictive and how it is killing people, they didn't care. Now, the other thing about Trump is his words, "Make America Great Again." It took me a while because I started out with America was never great for many. I'm sorry, because this land, Turtle Island, that we are all on here, except for you people over there, but that happened to you people over there across the pond longer than it happened to us. All the people lived in harmony and balance and in relationship, and then some bright idea, people said, well, I'm an authority and I'm going to take charge and I'm going to make everything according to the way I want it for the good of my people or my pocket. So when the people came here, the European people came here to Turtle Island, the people were living here in harmony and balance. They were in relationship to spirit and to nature, okay? That's how they lived. But then you had this people come from Europe who were already tainted and confused and mixed up and lost their original instructions on how to live in harmony and balance. And they were inundated with this organized religion, okay, that allowed them, under the name of God, to kill people who weren't Christians, all right, and to take their land and commit genocide. That's the foundation of this country, the United... Well, is it united? It is not united. It is disunited or whatever. It's dist. So I'm saying America was never great for many people here. It was based on the foundation on genocide and slavery. Wake up. That's it. That's just the beginning. It doesn't mean we have to stay there. Okay. We do not. Now we're all here together. What are we going to do about it? Now Trump has his plan to make America great again. It took me a while to figure that out. And you know what that is? Let's usurp all the resources here in our part of the world because we want to be great. We want everybody in the world to come to us for oil, for gas, for coal, for uranium, whatever it is. We want to be the greatest producer of everything the other part of the world needs so that we will have all this money. And that's where you are. And that's where we are. So, make America great again. okay, it's up to us people. The only way we're going to make America great again is to come together in unity as brothers and sisters. Yes, like you said, our family. Oh, Uncle Joe, yeah, he was an alcoholic and he did blah, blah, blah. And my cousin, blah, blah, blah. Well, that's family. Well, we are all one big family. We can't separate ourselves because we are together. We're here on this Mother Earth. We are the family of the Earth. We are the children of the Earth. Okay? So I'm just saying, you know, I just want to say something about, I'm not talking about religion. If people want to believe whatever they want to believe, I believe in a creator, a great spirit, some omniscience, some awesome omniscience that created this creation. And if you look, it's an intelligence was in process here. You can't deny that. I feel my sense of organized religion, I grew up Catholic. And organized religion means that they tell you how to pray, they tell you to stand up, sit down, kneel, blah, 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 and they tell you, I can get you to heaven, or I will, you know, if you don't come to me, you're going to go to hell. That's organization, men in dresses telling you how to get to God. We are sovereign beings, a spirit is embodied within us, we are already one with our Creator, one with God. Whatever you want to call it, God, Creator, Great Spirit, Wankatanka, Tukasha, it does not matter to me. We are one with our Creator already. We were created from love and joy. Just look around, okay? So anybody, any man that stands in front of me and says, I have the way to get you to heaven, but you must do this, that, and the other thing, I am sorry. That is not acceptable. I am already one with my Creator, as a sacred child. So, and you are too, and everybody out there. And it's sad to me that people have been controlled, mind controlled, over organized religions. And I'm saying all organized religions, they have no right to be involved in our spiritual lives. That's all that I'm going to say. Now, I follow the Lakota tradition because I am adopted Lakota, but I am also Nantichoke Lenape, Delaware, which is my heritage, but I'm also have European heritage. Okay? Now, our way of praying, okay, our ceremonies, there is no one there that tells us how to pray or that they can get us to God or to wherever in the afterlife. Nobody does that. This is a heart-spirit connectedness. It's a ceremony to give you an allowance to be able to pray and sing and to be around the sacred fire or smoke the sacred chanumpa, which is filled with red willow, which is a sacred plant. It's a connector to create a great spirit. It's an unknown power. It's a sacred gift given to the people by the white buffalo calf woman who came from Creator. So what I'm saying is, it's everyone's personal choice what they want to follow. I'm giving my experience and my perception of things because we are already one with Creator. And it has to come from your heart spirit. Nobody can tell you how to get to Creator or what's going to happen to you after you leave this physical realm, basically.
Do you think that the digital realm that we can use to communicate is a huge distraction, a honey trap, or some sort of... It's something about this doggone thing we call the Matrix, the Internet. You know, at one hand, it could be a technology that could be used for such wonderful purposes, educating people on how to, clean up their environment and learn about nature and maybe even find their own personal spiritual journey through life or whatever, to be able to connect us to one another. See, this is amazing. I would have been awesome to be in a time where we didn't need machines to think and be able to talk to each other, you know, with our minds, so to speak. And that would have been great. You know, like somebody mentioned in the chat room earlier about the, maybe before the internet, we connected to the Earth's internet, you know, like the plants. You communicate to the plants and they communicate to somebody else a message. Maybe at one time we actually had that capability and we lost it through, you know, generations of, you know, what we call technology. So I guess what I'm trying to ask, on one hand this internet's a good thing. On the other hand, it's a dangerous thing. So it all depends on how we're going to use it. It just like every bit of other technology we've got out there. It's not a bad thing to have a car. It's a bad thing to use that car improperly or not maintain it so it's, you know, plugging up the air you're trying to breathe. You know, even though I believe that nature is more powerful than all of us, I still believe that we have some accountability towards, you know, not running around making a mess of everything. And if we can just get that mindset out there into the world and people to actually care enough to use this technology to do research, to help each other, to put all these solutions on the table and actually get out there and do them, I think we can fix this world. I honestly believe we can fix it. I believe with the help of nature and our Creator, I honestly believe that we can fix this world. But the way that I see it going on right now is that so many people will say it's not possible. It's too messed up. It's overwhelming. There's no way to fix it. We're doomed. We just got to ride the storm out, whatever. And our governments are out there, according to them right now, it started off in the conspiracy realm where they said, well, the governments were doing this, and everybody, you know, classified it as a conspiracy theory, but now they're out there tampering with the weather, and they're tampering with the nature. You got companies like Monsanto trying to genetically alter plants to put Terminator genes in there so that you got to go back and buy seeds from them every year. Every bit of the system's construction always falls back to the same old exact thing, money and control over the human condition, the human family. And until we the people finally get tired of it, I'm not saying going out there burn all the books and go out there and trash all the technology. If I got something in my hand that could be used as a weapon or something for peace, it's up to me to decide which one I'm going to use it for. Now, our weapons of war out there, just by merely having these weapons of war, avoided a lot of wars. But in the same sense, lesser weapons of war have been used to continue the war. And until the people who are actually out there fighting these wars, until they finally say enough's enough, unless you give me a really good reason why I need to go do battle with these people, I'm not going. You know, by simply non-compliant. You know how many people they could probably fit in jail, or they'd probably just start shooting everybody until the average Joe finally said, no, you're not going to be shooting people anymore. You're not going to be doing these terrible things to our family. It's the same doggone concept. Nobody ever wants to be the first one to stand up against the system because they're afraid for their own safety. You know, there's been people martyr themselves throughout history basically went against the system, but everybody else who saw that happening were fear for their own safety, their own family. It would never do nothing to say, no, we don't want to go to war. We don't want to allow these companies to get by with polluting our planet. You see protests out there everywhere, in every direction, for every single subject under the sun. People protesting. Yellow vest, whatever, you name it. There's so many different protest groups out there. You know, Antifa groups out there getting violent. People just going completely and utterly nuts. Somebody prophesied that this was going to come to pass one day, and it's here. Now we got to figure out, what are we going to do? How are we going to calm this world down and show them what we're trying to show them? There are answers out there. There are natural solutions as opposed to synthetic chemical solutions to resolve everything. And it don't matter how big the problem is. It doesn't matter who I talk to. In all the realms, the circles that I go around in, it's always the same exact thing. People have been told for so long that things are so terrible They're afraid of everything. They're afraid of the boogeyman, the monster under the bed. They're afraid of the terrorists behind every bush. They're living their lives in fear instead of living their lives harmonious and connected to one another and nature. And I don't know how to get through to anyone other than to say the words that come to my mind and my heart whenever I'm trying to speak to the world and say, we have a way to fix this. You guys just need to calm down, sit down, and let's talk this thing out, and let's get it done. I'm tired of wars. I'm tired of hearing about people starving to death. I'm tired of hearing about the plagues and the famines and the pestilence and all the terrible atrocities that we've been doing to one another for so many generations. It's ridiculous. If the people of this world really truly want to fix this world, they got to do something. Each and every one of them have to do something. Something, anything. You know, if you do something, at least something gets done. If you do nothing, then absolutely nothing gets done. But if you're trying to wait around for the system to come to some sort of enlightenment of, you know, knowing the difference between right and wrong or doing the right thing for all of humanity or to, you know, finally realize the error of their ways, it's not going to happen. The gold is mightier than the common sense, because when these people see all these shiny things and they want to live in their ivory towers and they want to be wealthy and live like the rich and famous, which you do too. Everybody out there, if you want to be intellectually honest with yourself and the rest of the world, you'd like to live like a king or a queen. Each and every one of you. And then sometimes you will actually elevate people up and you will call yourself a community under communism or socialism or Marxism or whatever ism that you can come up with. You will elevate these people up to God's status to be the top of the pyramid, to be overruling all of you, to ensure that each one of you treat each other fairly and you all have food. You all have medicine. You all have a job and you all have everything you need. When in reality, you didn't need that king. You didn't need the queen. You didn't need the godlike status that you just bestowed upon somebody who isn't nothing more than a mortal man such as yourself. If you would have took the time to reach out to each other and helped your neighbor instead of calling the system on your neighbor, then you and your neighbor would have a good relationship, and then when times were hard, you would help each other out. That's the way that I believe that the native community used to be back in the day. The tribes and all the people who gathered together, they would feed one another, they would clothe one another, they would shelter one another, they would go out and they would hunt respectfully with nature, and they would be thankful for every single thing they got. And technology has basically blinded you to the reality of the world that you actually live in. Some of us don't even believe we're even in a world. We think we're some sort of matrix or some sort of weird, you know, mind melts. Just some sort of technology where they just basically use us like batteries like they did in the actual movie. They're tearing your souls apart. They're tearing your families apart. They're poisoning you. They're poisoning the land that you stand on. And they're giving you all this fear to keep the control so that you don't think that look, when you step outside your door and you look out there at all the things that's going on around you, there's a world out there. There's natural, there's birds, there's plant life, there's beauty all over. You're stepping over miracles 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, but you're too blinded by all this craziness in order to recognize that you've been blessed. Each and every one of you have been blessed by what I believe our Creator. But nonetheless, however you think we got here, we're putting upon ourselves the worst possible pain because we are slowly torturing one another. We're slowly putting each other to death. We're slowly allowing our brothers and sisters to starve, to freeze, to be overheated or whatever. All the luxuries that we all claim we love and want. We got so much. So much more than you can possibly imagine with this world. We've got every single resource necessary to resolve every single problem, to take care of every single living soul. Every man, woman, and child would have every single thing they need, but we are not going to get it through the governments of this world. We're not going to get it through the corporations of this world. We're not going to get it through any leadership of this world. There is no man on this planet who can guide you down the road better than you can guide yourself. And if you can get your family and your friends to realize that each one of you got some differences, none of you's all going to agree on everything, but the one thing that you all can agree on is that the way for us to move together into the future and to pave those stones necessary to ensure that our children and our children's children don't have to suffer the same woes that we all complain about on a regular basis, we are going to agree that we will be our brother's keepers. We will be the caretakers, the humble servants of one another, and we will get out there and we won't tithe to the churches. We'll tithe to God's creation. We'll tithe to God's people. We'll tithe to one another. That's the way it should have been. That's the way. We weren't supposed to build these tall towers of gold and silver and diamonds. We were supposed to build the temple, which is you. Each and every one of you is a temple. Each and every one of you is glorious. Each and every one of you is amazing. Each and every one of you is an individual creation of amazing proportions. And they told you and they taught you not to believe in yourself. They told you that you needed them. They told you that you could not fix it by yourself. And in some sense, they may very well have been right. Because what I just told you is you can't do it alone. You have to do it together. We're living in a world that's kind of messed up right now. But with all the people on this world that we've got, with all the talents and the skills and the genius and the brilliance and the beauty, if we decide to do what it is that we have the capabilities of, we can quite literally bring about a heaven on earth if we so choose to do so. It's our choice. Fix it or destroy it. That's your world. Barb, you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm thinking on the amazing, extraordinary abilities and powers that we were all given. It's not just a few. Everyone was given the opportunity and ability to make a difference, and how that difference comes along with the power that we have, and that power that we have is how we choose, in other words, free will. We're all given free will to choose what to how to speak, how to act, how to walk, or how to be. And it's our choice, our free will, whether we're going to be the frequency of love and light and compassion, or we're going to be the frequency of divisiveness and hatred and fear and doubt and all that. Because these things are right in our face now, and what we're talking about, how can we save the world, you know, it really is in our hands, but it's not beyond us. And I think that we have to come to realize about the frequency and energies and how powerful they are. And when you are in your heart spirit, when we come into our heart spirit, okay, that means we are in a different frequency. And that frequency, being heart spirit, is pure and loving and compassionate and joyous. That's what the heart spirit represents. And it represents goodness and caring and, along those high frequency energies that we are putting out. So the heart spirit coming into that is very key. And we can create and manifest extraordinary things, either positively or negatively, and we are actually doing that on a daily basis, unknowingly, by the energy that we are emanating. So if you think about yourself as like a, Everything that you say is like a pebble in the pond, and it has a ripple effect, and it moves out into the whole. Everything you think about is like that pebble in the pond, and it moves out as ripples of energy and frequency and affects the whole. And your words, your thoughts, your emotions, everything that we are is like a pebble in a pond that ripples out into the whole throughout the whole of the sacred web and either affects all things, all of life, even family, everything, either positively or negatively. So these are frequencies and vibrations that is in our hands, in our control, to co-create. And this is, I think, a very important teaching, is to know how we are related to everything, and we are either affecting it in a positive way or a negative way.
Yep.
The main thing I'd say is not to be in fear, and not to feel hopeless, and certainly don't doubt the ability that you have to make a difference, you know?
Barry to mute his mic. Sorry about that. I was asking Barry to mute his mic. Sorry about that.
Oh, hi, Barry. So I just want to finish up with this, that we talk about the things that are troubling because we must know what we are up against, and then we must come together in unity and share ways of, you know, balancing things, because I think it's the balance, and I think we have to find the balance within our own self, our own nature, our mind, body, and spirit. We have to come into balance with that, because that is the key piece, that's the key pebble in the pond, is our emotion, our thoughts, our words. So we are key, we are all essential, every one of us. And so we want to become aware and awakened to the impact that we have on a daily basis. Either we're going to knowingly realize how we affect things, or we're going to not know and just go on affecting things. And you know the sayings, what goes around comes around, so we are co-creators and we create our own reality. So if you think of yourself as powerful, extraordinary, awesome, part of all of creation, and how you are actually co-creating your own reality plus the reality and affecting all things, let's look at this, what we love. If we love our children and we're loving the ones that are coming and the trees and the waters and all of nature, how are we affecting them? Are we affecting them in a positive way? Or are we focusing on someone or something that we're angry at, and creating an angry energy or a frequency that is going to affect you eventually and those you love? That's how this creation works. It's pretty awesome. We have been given a gift of free will. Our free will is powerful. What you think about, what you do, and your words and the things you choose to do have an impact on the whole of the sacred web and out into infinity. That's how powerful we are. So don't despair and don't feel helpless and hopeless. We have to come, we do have some work to do, and I think our spiritual foundation and our connectedness to the light within us, the heart spirit within us, and who we really truly are is a key piece. And that's what I'm going to say right now. And welcome, Barry.
I was muted. I'm learning. Good morning.
How you doing, Barry?
Just getting my second cup of coffee in me and starting to feel normal.
We're having another one
whatever normal is.
Notorious conversations about life, and basically it started off with a fix or destroy the world concept. We talked about all different types of natural things to fix the world, and we talked about different types of technologies that could be either good or bad for the world. It's all how you use whatever tool you have to work with, and I put the world, the natural world, up on the top of the list of the best options for every single repair necessary, but at the same sense, don't want to leave man out because man made the mess, so man should be in there helping clean up the mess. What do you think?
I think most human beings don't realize that they're contributing to the destruction of this planet in everyday life activities, period. that we are supporting the mechanisms that are actually destroying our future. And we're doing it, a lot of people, unknowingly, that they actually believe in the system, that they actually think that things are fine, that the government will come up with solutions, that environmental issues, sure, we hear about them, but they're not major, because if they were major, they'd be talked about on mainstream, and we don't hear about it. So everything's got to be under control. We as a society are completely duped as to what really is important. And the most important thing in my life is to make sure my children have a planet to live on.
Yeah.
And right now we see this planet being destroyed. So why are we doing that? Why are we shooting ourselves in the foot? Why are we committing suicide? Because that's what we're doing. The human mind has to expand and understand that the things that you think important in our life are nothing. They're trivialist. They're absolutely meaningless. To the future, our legacy is what we leave for our children. And right now, I don't think many people out there can say that their legacy is a good one. We've all contributed to the problem. Now it's up to us to fix it. Okay. And we do have the solutions. We do. So whether we get them in place before time runs out on us, I've said this many times, that we need to get involved now, that if we wait 10 years, that we might find ourselves in a situation of not being able to fix what we've done to this planet. And I think that day is coming real soon. So we need to wake up to it, for sure. Gary Gilbert wants to come in today. Can we pull him in? He's like joining this show.
Yeah.
Call Adam if you want.
Some people might go by the out of mind or out of sight, out of mind concept until it actually gets into their neighborhood, like what was going on down there in Florida. I don't live in Florida, but I got family that live in Florida, and they had a red tide mixed with some runoff from different farms and sugar deals, and I recognized that there was a natural solution that was actually part of their environment, so it wouldn't be some invasive species, but there was a way to actually fix the problem. And so I reached out to contact them and give them that information. Well, it wasn't the government that got anything done. It was the people, when they finally realized that there were solutions available, that basically forced the hand of the government to do something about it, by getting the media involved and all that. That's where the power came in. It wasn't until the average Joe got tired of seeing all the dead fish on the side of the ocean there, and watching all the beaches start to be all nasty or whatever, that they actually did something about it. And so maybe they'll solve that problem. Yeah, you can add your friend in there if you want. It's just I wanted to throw that in there real quick to answer what you was talking about.
Yeah, we're seeing explosions of red tide all over the planet right now, which is this. I don't know if you've been following it, but I have been, and I've looked at multiple reports, the breakouts of red tide. The increase in red tide is incredible around the planet right now. So we all know that the ocean's in trouble, and now she's telling us that she's in trouble, and it's up to us to get involved.
Well, a lot of it...
The ocean's life is all life on our planet.
If you look at where all these episodes are coming about, a lot of it is a natural imbalance, because people don't realize what it is that they're doing. If you got, like, for example, the Florida issue was when they had runoff from the sugar plants going into the Lake Okeechobee, and runoff from the opposite side where they had some cattle farms as well, and all that nutrients getting into that pond. Well, that aggravated the green algaes and got the green algaes going, and then every time there was a storm and they had to release water, downstream, well, it went both directions to both different sides of the ocean down there on Florida. But then from that point, that green algae, when it gets down to, there's a section of water between the ocean where you got fresh water and salt water that they call brackish water. That's where the salt water and the fresh water mix. Well, green algae can't live in that. However, even though green algae is dead, that's going to be a food source for the red algae. So that's going to aggravate the red algae, which we know releases toxins, and it kills off fish. It also sucks up oxygen. So what the domino effect that started from what might have been good intentions of farming for sugar or whatever, or farming cattle or whatever, they... because they didn't understand the basics of you know, nature and science, they basically started a natural disaster by trying to, you know, do some growing or whatever. If they had understood what they were doing prior to all this stuff, they could have actually turned what would have been a negative into a positive by using a already natural plant to the environment of Florida to resolve this issue before it ever even got down to Lake Okeechobee. It would have already been, you know, fresh water that wouldn't over put too many nutrients in the water. If the doggone algae has plenty of food, it's going to grow like wildfire. The same exact thing is happening all over all the 50 states out here in the United States, is because when the farmers out here are fertilizing their ground, plus the different types of nitrogens they put in the soil and all that, and even whenever they finally harvest the crop and they leave all the holes or whatever of the deal on the ground, and it basically all that runoff goes into the ponds, you'll start getting a massive growth of different types of algaes and duckweed and watermill that will cover that entire pond, and it will double itself in size every 24 to 48 hours, and eventually you got a pond that's dying from underneath because it's blocking out all the sunlight, breaking down the ecosystem in that pond. However, if the farmers would have, you know, thought ahead of time and put some retaining ponds and allowed all that runoff to go in those ponds and be filtered out by nature's system before ever releasing it back out into the environment, then that situation would have never happened. Plus, they could have turned the duckweed and the watermill that they then in turn filtered the fertilizers out with into next year's fertilizer. They could have turned it into biofuel. They could have turned it into chicken feed. It would have been a plus. By taking a negative prior and turning it into a positive and not releasing it into the environment downstream, you know, once it's off their land, it's not their problem. Well, it becomes everybody else's problem because it's a domino effect that will go from pond to pond. Now you have all these what once were beautiful lakes that are polluted up with algaes, and it all started from right there at that farm, every bit of it.
Yeah, that's a broad statement. Could be applied to just about everything we seem to be doing to the planet. The interference we're having in nature with our chemicals brought to society to make us more comfortable and to make us happy and to give us luxuries that we don't really need. We're contributing to the destruction of the biosphere. And we see it, this, you know, you were talking about algae, but that could be applied to a broad array of subjects.
But
Gary Gilbert has joined us. Gary, how are you doing today? We are talking about fixing the planet and destroying the planet. What are your thoughts on algae, and welcome?
Well, hello, Shaz. Hello, Mystery Crow, and hi again, Barry. What are my thoughts on destroying the planet or fixing the planet? Well, most days I'm very pro-fixing.
No F-bombs. No F-bombs.
Did I?
No. No, but I'm just warning you prior.
Oh, I'll do my best. Most days I'm very much pro-fix the planet, you know, not in a tree-hugging kind of way, but in a common-sense kind of way. But on those other off days, I most certainly just destroy it, burn it, and start over. But that's more a social thing. I was listening to what Shaz was saying, and he's absolutely right. I mean, common sense dictates through our very simplistic things that we've come across, that we've always done actually, but that we definitely come across today that we should have, could have been doing. So there's really no excuse for it except for profiteering or laziness. One of the two. And what people have to remember is that it won't be long before somebody does something that's irreversible. And when all those trees are done and all that stuff is killed and the waters are poisoned and everything else, then what? Who's going to profit then? So,
unfortunately, a good part of society won't get involved in stopping this until it gets to that point. But a good part of society is still living in their bubble. There's still food in the store. There's gas at the gas station. They can turn on the lights in the house and they come on. and most of society won't get involved until it directly affects them. That's a sad thing to say, but it's true.
Well, that's the times when I say, screw it, let it burn. You know?
Well, unfortunately, my children have to live on this planet, so I can't take that attitude. I've got to try and fix what we got here, because I have generations coming into this world that want to live in the same kind of world that I grew up in. Go ahead.
In the good note, and on a good note, is that I still say, right now, even as bad as things may appear and all the things that you hear, I still say that we still have an opportunity to resolve it, because we got all the knowledge and technology necessary to do it. The hardest part is what I keep hearing everybody say all the time, is getting people to motivate, to want to do it. It's not that we can't. That's why I want to talk to all these environmental groups out here. I want to actually sit down with the most radical environmental groups that you can find and tell them there's ways to fix every bit of this, every single bit of it.
But Chaz, look at it from this perspective, though. You take a look at, you know, one of the most common, I don't even want to call it a conspiracy theory, but one of the most common things today, especially with the left, is that they say, oh, well, George Soros is funding all this stuff. He's spending literally millions of dollars to create havoc with the left by paying them to do the things they do, whether it be Antifa, whether it be the migrants, whether it be this, that, the next thing, to fix things or to disrupt things both, it takes money.
Yeah.
Money makes people to act. So a lot of these Antifa types, they wouldn't be out there if they weren't, you know, getting motivated by economics. Many of these this activist groups, they wouldn't be out there if it wasn't motivated by something of that nature. So the reality is, whether we like it or not, we live in a world where money drives things.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
And the destruction is being done because of money, but the solutions are there as well, but they take money as well. They take money to get people to pay attention, because that's what the underlying current of attention is about.
Look, I'm just one person, but I'm gonna run a social experiment and a science experiment at the same time. I had some stickers made up, and I'm gonna put these stickers on these buckets. And basically, what it says is, "Let us show you how to turn trash into a solution." And I call it bottle caps for mad science. I'm going to show some people how I'm going to take somebody's trash, and I'm not only going to fund my research, but I'm going to actually help people get involved to want to clean up and recycle. These people, there's a lot of people out there that's got a lot of negative stuff to say about recycling, but everything, when I look at that picture that Barbara sent on that website where they're talking about these doggone rubbish piles in Pakistan, I believe it was. And when I look at that, me personally, I see a resource. And there's people over there in Europe or over in the UK that turn old plastic bottles into petrol, gasoline. All right? Well, they're petroleum products. But not only that, is the type of plastic that these things are made out of is a plastic that's really workable at lower temperatures. So you can actually make usable products with those right out of the gate. And if
I work with a guy during some of the projects that I'm on right now, who is over in Australia, and they take tires and turn it into biofuel.
See?
There is solutions, and there is profitable solutions. Again, it's a matter of economics, though. And when it comes to the average day, everyday Joe, you have to find that emotional-based trigger that's going to get them to want to. I see people in America, for instance, I know people in America who, they make a big thing about dumpster diving, right?
Yeah.
Like, this is an actual event for them. It's not done because they have to so much.
They love it.
They do it because they enjoy it. They actually love finding treasures that somebody threw away that to them is like really a cool thing or whatever. You know, and I look at Taiwan, who did that big experiment lately where they took all their trash and turned it into a national park, an island of growth. I mean, there's a thousand and one different ways to attack the problems. based off of that cultural area or that geographical location. The thing with Westerners, specifically Canadians and Americans the most, we are behind the curve. Not that we don't create or invent or we don't come up with great solutions and ideas. We're just lazy. Because we just don't do anything unless we're motivated by some kind of economic gain. Not as individuals, because there's lots of individuals that, definitely like yourself, do little projects here and there on your own to show that it can be done. Because that's the ingenious part. That's the creation of Western civilization. But as a mass society, you look at North America, America and Canada, for instance. It's not like we don't know about the problems of trash. It's not like we don't understand the problems of polluting the planet. Shoot, we've been talking about it for how long now? You know, you've got kids in grade one and grade two in kindergarten learning about recycling and protecting the planet. We know, we are aware. It's apathy. And it's applied to almost every problem we have in society in the West. The Western civilization is very apathetic. Not as individuals, but as en masse, as a whole.
But do you know the governmental type solutions that are available out there is basically like one I heard just yesterday on a video about how, it's like, I can't remember which two states it is in, but it is an $800 fine for a business to have a plastic straw. Because the plastic straws are getting into the waterways or whatever, and they claim that they're too small to recycle, which is ridiculous, but nonetheless, $800 fine for a plastic straw.
Whoever signed off on that law needs a throw punch.
Yeah.
They should be removed from public office and barred from anywhere where public trust is put in their hands.
Yeah, I agree.
On the bright side of things, Indonesia right now is in the process of building two carbon fuel production facilities under contract from a company in Squamish, British Columbia. Is that good news or what?
I was going to say, there's a company in Squamish that's doing that.
Yeah, they actually have secured, listen Gary, they've secured two contracts in Indonesia to build these facilities in Indonesia. They are going forward with this because it is a no-brainer.
That's phenomenal. Those guys are brilliant.
Oh man! It's just an amazing answer to a majority of our problems. We put the government's global warming scam in its place. It would change.
But you notice something about
generation,
huh? You notice something about that, Barry? They struggled for the last decade to get that plant going to become a working model.
Great.
To do the proof of concept without government assistance.
Yes, I know.
The government would never get behind this.
Because it takes away the petrodollar. We know that, Gary. They'll never support anything that's actually
carbon. The government that decries global warming and carbon, then pushing for carbon tax on the average Joe citizen who doesn't know better, has the solution. They could have jumped on board and propelled this a decade ago. And instead, they let it sit there where these guys have been struggling to make it happen, and they had the faith and the fortitude to see it through. And now it's starting to pay off. And once they do this in Indonesia, you'll see a lot of other people jump on board.
Well, they're all going to pay attention, Gary, but we could say the same thing about the hydrogen cell. How long has the hydrogen cell been known to mankind, and why has it not been implemented through our society on a large scale? I mean, come on, run your cars off water, but that doesn't go along with the petrol dollar, and that will never be allowed to happen unless we get up in mass and say, hey, we want this. The U.S. Navy, believe it or not, get a load of this. The U.S. Navy, in their report, say they're going to run all their ships in the military by 2025 on the hydrogen cell.
Yep. The one crazy thing about the whole carbon thing to begin with is that people don't seem to realize that they try to use scarcity as a reason why they can jack the fuel prices up. But the problem is, there is absolutely no such thing as fossil fuel. Fossil fuel is one of the biggest lies ever told in the history of science. The fact of the matter is, we live in a carbon-based world. Plants, us, everything out there. And until this planet stops doing what it is doing, until the chemistry stops, until the mechanics, the heat, the temperature, the pressure, and all that stops, it is physically impossible for this planet to ever, ever, ever run out of what they call fossil fuel, a.k.a. crude oil. Right? So, what for whatever reason, you know, people seem to just listen to what's going on. Oh, well, you know, it's scarcity, you supply and demand. It's all this crazy stuff. The same exact concept applies to water. You cannot physically run out of water. It's not possible. Water is the most stable molecule on the planet. You can't
destroy it. We do the same thing with food. We do the same thing with food, yeah. Too. But you look in, again, look in Western Canada and America, Western civilization, we waste so much food.
Oh, yeah.
Our problems are very, very clear. You know, if we didn't waste the food we did, we could feed the rest of the planet.
Yeah,
we feed the rest of the world with the food that we waste.
That's right. That's right. So, everything they do is a very concerted effort amongst the people that pull the strings in life. You know, the corporate mongers that direct the governments and the elites and all these other things you want to call them. But you can apply it to literally everything across the board.
Yep.
Food. Oh, we're scarce of food. You know, we in the Western Canadian area grow so much wheat and throw it away, it rots in the fields, you know, because they can't sell it for a fair market value or what they perceive as a fair market value. You know, energy. We have energy solutions that even aren't being talked about that could resolve the interplanetary energy solutions, you know. And as far as the oil thing that you were just talking about, here's an example. Humans are carbon-based, right?
Yeah.
So, as a man, in the heat, in the summertime, you ever been outside, you went away camping for a couple days where you might not have had access to a shower?
Oh, yeah.
And you know how in your, I got to be careful with my wording because I'm supposed to be polite here, your nether region,
yeah,
it creates, it's film. This buildup of stuff, of sweat and skin cells,
yep,
and all this stuff, that's your carbon.
Yeah.
All right. It's the same thing, in essence, as how a lot of this fuel is created. It's all this stuff coming together to make something new, and we utilize it and burn it,
yep,
to run an engine.
It's heat and pressure.
For all the times that we suck some out of the ground, we also put back in the ground.
Yep.
And it's always constantly being renewed. Same with water, same with food, same with literally everything. Yep. And again, we keep listening to these guys because they know the best way to keep you off balance and off kilter is just keep you scared.
Yeah.
Keep you scared that you're not going to get yours. That's why they keep directing you. Don't worry about others. Worry about you first. Yep. Just worry about you. Make sure you got yours.
Well, that's the whole plan, is to keep everybody that way, terrified and focused on themselves and their own survival, so that, you know, that empathy that you say. But, you know, we all inhale oxygen and exhale carbon dioxide. We're just like the mycelia, the fungi. Does the same thing. All of the plant nature does the same thing. You know, I find it interesting and curious, though, whenever there's a major disaster, how people rally together and come forward and help people. You know, they pitch in, they help everybody, they work together to help what's, you know, those that are in trouble, what's going on. I think we see that across the board with pretty much major disasters. And then everybody goes back. Once it's done and finished, everybody goes back to their own little world and continue on in their way. But, you know, you have the media working against us also, that does not really give us the full information of what is really happening on many levels. And many people aren't aware, or they don't make the effort to become aware, because there are certainly ways that we can all find truths and source of pertinent information. But I think we have to look at the whole agenda to really dumb down and keep people separated and, you know, ignorant of the plight of things. And, you know, you have to take responsibility to find these sources, to find the truth, and to start reaching out to people And that is happening here. I see that all the time. People are forming their communities. They're building gardens together. They're, you know, working to help support their communities and so on. Certainly we need more than that, that's for sure. But I think this push to isolate us and separate us is a big thing. It's definitely an agenda so that we fear... What?
Absolutely.
So that we fear each other, right?
Well, it's divide and conquer, right?
Well, sure. I mean, that's been a plan from the beginning. Yeah.
All we need to do is load up a couple thousand airplanes, fill them full of industrial hemp seeds, and spray the whole planet. And you, I mean, you think that's funny? You know what we could do to this planet?
I think that's a great idea.
Would save the planet.
Hey, they're spraying chemtrails on us. Why don't you get up there and spray hemp seeds on us?
Well, we need to stop the spraying of chemicals in our
Well, I know that, of course.
And we need to go around and change it with hemp seeds for a couple of years, and all the destruction that we've done to this soil on this planet could be cleansed and changed simply by doing that. That sounds crazy? It's not. It's a fact. So what, you want to fix the planet? Stop this insane use of chemicals in our society and get back to naturals, because the planet is being thrown into a state of disbalance that I believe the planet's never experienced in its history. It's never been exposed to the levels of chemicals, to the nuclear isotopes, to everything that we're doing to destroy it. It's never had to deal with that in the history of this planet, I don't believe. So what are we doing?
Here's a question for all three of you. Approximately, how old is the planet?
Who knows?
Anybody can answer.
I think it's 3.2 billion years old, approximately.
It depends on who you believe.
Nobody knows.
Just hypothesize based off of your personal experiences. 3.2 billion is a fine number. We all, either way, we know it's been a long time. So, how long has mankind been around on the planet? Roughly, give or take. Just hypothesize again.
That's a loaded question. There's lots of different reports of going back hundreds of thousands of years. I mean,
going back further and further and further.
If we go by current train of thought.
Well, I don't know. I can't say, because if you want to go from a biblical reference, it's not very old at all. If you want to go for a scientific reference, it could be astronomical. If you want to go by basically a conspiratorial, it could be trillions of years old. Who knows?
Okay, well, let me go with the next question then. The next question is, how long has mankind been industrialized enough to create these pesticides and these poisons that we're spraying around? Roughly.
About 120 years or more?
120 years.
Okay.
Give or take.
Take those three questions that I just asked and think of this for a second. By all answers, the planet's been around for a real long time. Humans have been around for a long time. But it's only been recently that we've been screwing things up and doing all this damage. If we did what Barry was suggesting, guess what? Chances are the planet would get back on track again, and it would right itself. It's kind of what it does. It's kind of...
It needs help right now eliminating all the chemicals that we've introduced into our environment in the last 120 years.
Yeah.
I think the help is simply stopping. You know, even if we just stopped and left it as it is, it would right itself. It's kind of what the planet does.
Yeah, the chemicals have a nasty habit of sticking around for a long, long time, Gary. Mother Nature could use a little help with that.
Talked about that earlier. Mother Nature does not need help. The mycelia, the web of the mycelia throughout the whole of the Earth is a healer for all of this stuff, plus radiation and everything that
you could imagine
that we have done, radiation, oil spills, everything. The Mother Earth has the answer if we just stop messing with her.
What I'm talking about is a natural help from a natural thing that's on this planet. Just
prepared,
a little kick.
Whether or not we create the chemicals by mixing elements together, those elements existed in the planet.
Yep.
They always have. It's not like Mother Nature, in her brilliance, doesn't know what it is and how to deal with it. If we just stopped, she might take a little minute, but she'll get to it. She'll fix it. just kind of how it works.
The problem we've got, though, here in society that we can deal with, if we just don't deal with this particular type of person, is that it's impossible to negotiate with a greedy man unless you're willing to give them more than their share for anything. So, with that said, we need to stop negotiating with the greedy man. There's a friend of mine that used to talk about guerrilla charity. He was talking about how they used to throw people in jail. They might still do in some places. They throw people in jail for feeding the homeless. And I said, well, that'd be about the time to get a Batman suit and run by and hand them a sandwich and run off. And that's what he called it, guerrilla charity. And I also said, well, then maybe we also ought to do guerrilla gardening, where we take a whole bunch of food seeds and just as you're casually strolling down the road, chuck a little to the left, chuck a little to the right. Now there's food for everybody growing all over the place.
I've been doing something similar to that up in my area, out in our woods, in our boreal forest. I've been planting and transplanting different crops just randomly out in the woods, some around the water, some in the middle of the woods, and seeing what takes and what doesn't. This is not a new concept, and it's something that we can be doing. The thing is, a lot of this comes back to the socio-political climate that we live in.
Yep.
You'll understand, if you look back in history, even in American history, the socio-political climate has changed drastically, repeatedly, through its evolution. And this is kind of where I really appreciate Barbara's thoughts, because she... this whole evolution of mankind's inner self, right? Our inner beings, you know, as we get closer to where we're supposed to be, where I believe actually we started, you're going to see these transitions. You're going to see these switchings within society, because we're going to become more almost fiscally responsible in a natural way, if that makes sense. We're not going to be as wasteful with things. We're not going to be as damaging to things. We're going to do things that protect people and things and the planet itself. It's going to happen. It's always happened throughout history. It's going to get back to that.
Well,
it's just...
I believe we could actually turn trash into money.
What you're talking about is the cycle of...
humankind.
You know, even the Kali Yuga... You talk about the cycle of the Kali Yuga, where cultures became enlightened, and following that natural law, you know, the nature's law, or the original instructions, I call it. You know, there's always that rising of the culture into enlightenment, or the golden age called, you know, and then something goes awry, and then something happens, you know, like the plan unfolds again, or authorities, so-called authorities, step in, or somebody gets a bright idea that they could make more money off of this or that, or utilize people, or enslave people, or... It seems to be a plan. Is it human nature? I think we all have the capacity and the ability to choose to do harm or to do good. And I think this, to me, is about a spiritual... I'm going to say spiritual... teaching or spiritual challenge. We can rise above, I think, anything that is thrown at us or that we are inundated with, that either is agenda made or our involvement. But it is up to us. We have the capacity and the ability to solve all these issues, and Mother has all the answers as well. I'm for the Mother and all that she can do to heal herself, and all these extraordinary medicines that she has on all levels. Without the interference, you know, like if you have, now we know that, for instance, pharmaceuticals are going to the rainforests and speaking to the indigenous people there and getting them to show their medicine plants to them. And now they are taking these plants and they are actually utilizing them in pharmaceuticals, but they're corrupting the nature of that plant, you see. And that's due to greed, you know. Carelessness and greed, you know, but this is what's happening, and the ancient people had all these medicines and the ways, but we all did too. Our ancestors did as well. Originally, we were all given how to live in harmony and balance here in nature, and it takes one person to have a bright idea to manipulate something or manipulate people, and then everyone's in the position to choose free will. Okay, what are the repercussions? How will it affect the whole and those that are coming along behind us, the coming generations? Was in our culture, in indigenous culture, everything that was done, thought of, or any movements were considered, taken into consideration the next coming generations, because we obviously impact upon those coming up behind us. And that was the choice and the free will of the people to live according to the, to that. You know, is that awareness, that understanding of how we are affecting our coming generations by what we are doing here, the choices that we are making.
I don't mean to interrupt, but one of my friends, Roman Light, I don't know if you know who he is. I know Barry does. Roman Light, it's a French fella who's one of the representatives for the Yellow Vest movement in France, because he's one of the few that actually, for the most part, fluently speaks English. And I just thought maybe you guys would like to say hello and meet him.
Sure, just give him a speech before they jump on.
Give him the speech?
Yeah, the no bleeping speech.
That's not him. He's
really cool.
He's not that kind of guy. But he was just messaging me while we were talking. I apologize for interrupting.
Yeah, bring him on.
I figured I'd see if you guys were interested in saying hi. I know a lot of people haven't really gotten a chance to say hello to him yet.
There's always room around the round table.
Well, I just rang him up. He said he was interested, so let's just see if he answers. I'll just tell him, okay.
This show will go in a million different directions today, guys, which is cool.
I apologize. That's my bad. Oh, there he is. He's now on video. Hello, Roman. Say hello to Barbara Sweet Crow and Shaz, as well as Barry Prince and America.
Hey. Hello, how are you?
I'm good, you?
How you doing, Roman?
I'm pretty good. I was having a giggle with Gary. I was wondering how it is to live in a minus 18 degrees place.
Gary's been a lot colder than
I. We've been there a couple of times recently, which is not, you know, things definitely, the freezing temperatures have been escalating here.
Well, that was in the house.
Oh, in the house. Oh,
yeah,
well,
in the house, yeah.
Sorry
to
hear that.
Well, I had some people who tried to invite me to go in Canada, and I was like, well, I know a friend in Canada, and I think I'm just going to wait for summer, maybe.
Well, you come on up to British Columbia when you come there, Roman. We'll take you fishing.
Cool.
We're talking about environmental damage and destruction of our planet. And that's been the focus of our conversation here for the last hour and a half or 2 hours. I just joined in the last hour, but that is the conversation we're having. So,
we're talking about the solutions, too, and the natural solutions.
We're talking about the natural solutions to the problems.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because we were talking about the consciousness and the spirituality aspect, and Roman is very much in tune with that as well. That's why I just thought it might be an interesting conversation.
Cool.
I think you and Barbara might actually almost be kind of connected on that level there, Roman. Maybe perhaps you could share.
Am I the only one with the camera? Because maybe I should stop it. Like, it makes me feel nervous if I'm the only one watching myself.
No, we're all staring at you.
Yeah.
Cool.
You should probably wipe your nose, though. There's something hanging there.
It's nice to know. It's nice to know what the person looks like that we're talking to. Thank you.
Yeah, I don't turn my camera on because it breaks the camera, so we'll leave that one alone.
So does it mean, Barbara, that you haven't heard about what I'm doing in France yet?
Well, I was just informed that you are involved in the Yellow Vest movement. And I don't know too much about it as far as... I mean, I see that what's going on a little bit, but, you know, I'm a suspicious person. I've grown suspicious. I see things that are being manipulated in our world that appear to be, perhaps appear to be good or whatever, but there's always some kind of something going on behind the scenes. So I cannot speak to the Yellow Vests as far as, you know, what is really going on fully. And it would be good to hear.
You have an occasion to speak to the French guy that is providing Yellowverse information across the world. So if you have
well,
any
it'd
questions,
be good. I'm glad. Yeah, I'm glad to because I'm wondering if how could I say this? Because we see things here like Antifa and going on and what's the deep state and the manipulation of the deep state and all pretty much a lot of aspects of the troubles that we are dealing with and the lies and the falseness of things and activating certain groups of people to actually not for the good, you know, but to create a revolution, for instance, which is what is needed or wanted by the deep state, which will create their ability then to bring out martial law, which I believe they want to bring martial law, to really lock down everybody, to lock down us all. And I think what's happening over there is involving us here and all over the world, because we are all connected, and what happens here is going on there. We've noted these risings and various things, you know, like Venezuela and the stuff that's happening there and Brazil there in France.
I'm still waiting for the question, if you have any questions.
My question is there a deep state involvement here? Because we notice that the deep state is manipulating a lot of this stuff to actually get the people riled up out in the streets so that they can bring martial law.
So the question is the deep state is involved into it, like what do you mean by getting involved? Because it's a popular insurrection, so like it's not people paying to disrupt the government. It's people waking up and opposing themselves against the global agenda. So I'm not sure.
Is it about taxes or the whole? I mean, because I've only read a little bit.
It has absolutely nothing to do with taxes. No.
That's what I thought.
So basically, what he's saying is it's a grassroots kind of thing. People just kind of fed up. They don't want no part of the one world government, and so they're gathering and they're voicing their deals. Am I right?
Well, it's a bit more complicated than that. It's people who are starting to realize that there's something wrong, and instead of just staying home and continuing to be screwed up every day, they're starting to go out and reconnect with their fellow citizens.
Well,
and they're starting
great.
To realize that they're all in the same position and starting to realize that there's something wrong. But most of them are uneducated about the true source of who is behind the scene and who is manipulating who. So they're just starting to get out of their sleeping space and slowly understanding that there's something much complicated and much deeper. But in the meantime, they don't really need to understand any of that. They just want to stop the situation. They want to get rid of the president. They want to get rid of whatever laws he put in place. And we came with an antidote, which is called the RIC.
It's called the what?
The RIC, RIC, Referendum Initiated Citizen.
Oh, well, let's hear about it.
Yeah, that's the problem. Like, I spent the last 2 months spreading that message across the world, but like, people just listen to whatever they want to listen, and they think things the way they can. So, yeah, like, the RIC is the antidote to our modern disease, which is based on people in power having ultimate power, and the true people who have the power, which is the people, do not have any ways to stop the people that they elected. So the antidote is very simple. We need to give power back to the people. How? By putting the initiative of the referendum in people's hands.
Yeah.
If we could have the initiative of the referendum in our hand, then we would not wait for them to tell us what we think. We would just trigger ourselves the referendum and therefore stop their agenda whenever we want.
Well, there you go. That's what the United States Constitution, it guaranteed a remedy if the government got out of control, and that's why our rights are so important. But I'm inspired to think that now that people's actually getting out there and actually doing something. See, the problem that we have worldwide is that we're being propagandized. Like, any good movement out there gets demonized right out of the gate, but then you got other ones that are quite literally out there wreaking havoc for whatever purposes, whether it be financial or just for their own, you know, agenda. And so that makes it hard for people like us to be able to trust when things like this, good things like this, come about. So I hope you understand what I'm saying. Huh?
Let me Let me interrupt for a second if I can.
Yeah, go ahead.
America was founded on the whole RIC concept. Before it was called RIC, obviously it was a different thing. And it basically comes back to We the People.
Yeah.
The concept behind RIC is you're not asking for your voice or begging for your rights anymore. You're taking them back.
That's
you are removing the bad elements. And if you remember back in the history of America, it was the French that brought that to America, that helped create that. The Statue of Liberty was a gift from France to America. Yeah. So it's funny to me, the parallels of today, France starting this again on a global scale. So when we were talking about the things that we did before Roman came in, about all these solutions that individuals have, not en masse, but as individuals, this is exactly the concept of what Roman is referring to when it's about, when he's talking about the RIC. It's, we want change, and we're going to implement that change.
That's it. I like that.
We're not waiting for the government to do it. We're not waiting for the corporations to do it. We're not waiting for all these other manipulators to do it for their profit.
So,
we're doing it.
And the point is that
it's not that much about change. It's about getting that balance between the people who claim to speak on our behalf,
yep,
and us getting a right to control if they're doing the job, the right job or not.
Yep.
If the people are coming and saying, oh, I'm going to do this, and they do exactly the opposite, how can we do to block them? Like, Hitler has been elected. Hitler has won through the democratic process. So we obviously know that democratic system, the way it is implemented today, is a failure.
Yep.
And history already showed us that it was a failure. So, like, did we fix anything? No, we don't. We did not. Why? Because the people in power don't like that we, the people, remind them that without them, without us, they're nothing.
Yeah.
So they just like to, like, hide this under the carpet and do like if, no, we are the power. Like, buddy, like, without us paying the tax, without us making the economy, running the economy, consuming, producing, creating, you guys are fucking parasites. You're useless. So you don't have the power. We have the power. You took the power from us through that illusion of choice, claiming that voting is identical to electing. No, it's not. When you elect someone, you give away your right to make decisions, and someone is making decisions on your behalf. When you vote things, you express your free will, you express your choice. And they manipulated us to make us believe that electing is voting, and you're going to vote for the people you're going to elect. This is actually wrong. Like, voting means you involve yourself in a decision-making process and you learn from the consequences that the choice that you made. When you elect someone, you separate that initial of decision from the consequences of the action, which is what the people in power want. They want to be spoiled enough to make whatever they want without having to justify their choice to history and to the people. And we let them do that for years without even understanding that we are responsible for that by giving away our power away. And giving away the power is okay as long as it's for organizing the society. And as long as we, the source of the power, the employers, are capable to fire the employee whenever we want. Not yeah. because, like, they decided that it's going to be every 5 years. Not because they decided that it's when they will decide that it's time for them to leave. Like, it's just because we didn't understand that perspective, that we, the people in power, needs to be in charge of the decision that we have, and that when we give away our right to make decisions, we also should be having the right to take it back
yeah.
whenever we want. And that's where, when the initiative, because that's the key word, the initiative of the referendum is coming in place. When we get the initiative of the referendum, then the people in power cannot tell us what we do and what not to do. Because, like, it's very simple. You start a petition or polls. You have, let's say, 1% of the population who sign up that poll. You have then a legal organism which is in charge to start a national referendum. And if the people are saying yes to that referendum, this is automatically implemented into the law without asking anything to the parliament, to the senate, or to the government. Why? Because we are the employers. We do what we want. And
so,
that's what the people are starting to understand, and that's what they try to spread to the rest of the world, if the people want to listen.
Before you go on, there's a question from the chat here, from Patty Walking Turtle. She says, do the Yellow Vests want to set up a new government or change the status quo of government? do you have a plan of a new government waiting in the wings? If so, if you're going to replace this or take this down.
So first of all, it's complicated to say we, because like the way the Yellow Vests have been successful so far is because there's no leader. We don't want any leaders. Why? Because the leaders can be manipulated, corrupted, and taking off the system by the government in place. So we want to reframe the position of what a leader mean. Like a leader is not someone that is speaking on people's behalf. He's a spokesperson. He's not there to express his own opinion. He's here to look at the people he's representing and say, guys, what do you want me to say? That's the true purpose of a leader. A leader is not there to take the position and basically follow his own agenda, because this is what politics is about today. Yeah, and this is the core of the problem we're leading today, is that the people have a conflict of interest between the loyalty that they should have towards the people that give them trust and the loyalty to their own agenda, or the people who funded their own campaign, you know, or the political party. Like, all that are corruption against the interest of the people they represent and the loyalty that those representatives should have in regards to who they represent. So first of all, it's very complicated for me to say we, the Yellow Vests, because I have some ideas, but I cannot speak on the Yellow Vest behalf. And the only thing that I can tell you is that now that we understand that the RIC is the key, we don't really need a new government. We just need to implement the referendum initiated by the citizen concept into the Constitution. And then we will decide through the referendum initiated by the citizen concept how we want to create a new government, which type of society do we want, which rule do we want to put in place. And it's not there yet. Like, now what we want is to get rid of the actual system. And now that everyone in France, like everyone, 80%, 90% of people know that the Yellow Vest movement wants the RIC. They don't understand, all of them don't understand what the RIC is, but they feel that there's something huge there. Well, they feel that there's a huge concept that everyone that thinks a little bit starting to realize that this is huge. This is the missing key in our so-called democracy, because a democracy cannot be a democracy if the demos, which is the people, do not have access to the kratos, which is the power.
That's agreed. Patty says, woohoo, she likes that answer.
Let me get a point.
Let me kind of tie into what we were talking about prior to Roman coming on. If we wanted to stop the continued abuse of the planet and the dumping of garbage and actually do something positive with it, if we wanted to take the company in Squamish that's taking the carbon and turning it into fuel as an initiative, the people could say, yeah, we want to do this. This is where we want the government to start spending money. We can initiate that, vote on it, and fix the problem, have that solution in place without being waiting for the government to mandate. We initiate.
I agree.
So we can resolve these issues that we face as a country or as a globe or as a planet simply by our voices, by our direction, not by the direction of others. Sort of like he was saying, where we vote somebody in, and then we turn our back and they run amok for 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
Without any consequences. And if we vote in the wrong thing, we suffer the consequences for it.
Yeah.
So change that again.
One of the things that we've got a problem here in the United States, and you can hear it all the time if you listen to any of these so-called representation out there. First off, they don't even know that we're not a democracy here in the United States. We were never a democracy. We are a representative republic. And there's a whole big difference to that whole entire deal. We do elect our representation to go there and speak for us, at the government or whatever. But it has got to the point where even when you're listening to their speeches out there, they're always talking about how we got to protect our democracy. They keep repeating that ad nauseum, and people actually here in the United States believe that that's what kind of government we got. We're not a democracy. We're not a Marxism. We're not communists or socialists. We are a representative republic. We have that United States Constitution that they supposedly swore an oath to uphold and have been violating it over and over again, and yet we the people still trust that the system's going to work itself out. We got to stop trusting that the system's going to work itself out, because the track record shows that it is not going to work itself out.
Look, it's because these elected officials don't care about us. And that's what Roman is proposing, is the concept that we take back that control.
Yep, that's it.
And this is, and we don't need to change the government. We don't need to change the system. We don't need to do all these other things. It's not an overthrow. It's an enhancement of the current system to actually put it back on track to make it work again. And it's putting that power of government back exactly where the American Constitution states. We, the people, putting it back in our hands.
That's it.
But on a global level.
That's it. That's the key. See, we're all in agreements here. That's the whole thing. We have the solutions, folks. We can fix all these problems, these environmental disasters, as bad as things might seem. We got ways to fix it. We've got the technology. We've got access to an amazing amount of, material information. We got the resources. If you want to ask the government to do something, you're going to have to wait for the government to get around to it. Well, that was a funny story about that. I'll tell you later. But nonetheless, the government ain't going to get around to it unless you give it to them. You give them around to it and tell them now do the job. But the deal is, if you're waiting on the corporations to have a change of heart, if you're waiting on the governments to have a change of heart, if you're waiting on your neighbor to do something to fix things, it's not going to happen. You got to get down there in your communities and get your hands dirty. You got to start talking to people. You got to start working things out, finding these solutions and putting them on the table so that people know that there is even a solution available. That's what I'm hearing.
And that's the second problem that we're facing now, is that every citizen who are starting to get a little bit of audience are systematically shut down by Facebook.
Yep. They are.
So, I made a video a few days ago showing that I'm receiving about 20 to 30 new friend requests every day that I'm not accepting because I can't accept every people who's joining me. And when you look at my wall, my personal wall, over the last 4 or 5 days, I posted something like maybe 5 or 6 things. I don't post much. I had, in average, between 1 and 0 like. So, explain me how can I get hundreds of people contacting me every week, and I'm getting 0 people liking my post on my personal page. That's the definition of ghosting someone.
Yeah.
So right now, my bigger problem is that I'm fired by Facebook, and Facebook found a way to stop me by ghosting me entirely from my 3,000 friends, current friends. So how do I get that message out if I'm not having access to, if people cannot get access to my information? That's the problem.
Well, Roman, you hit the key.
This is, of course, the nature behind the Synthesis Project. The whole idea was to do exactly that, to take that power back, have an unfiltered, uncensored platform based off the Facebook concept where people can now share that information, and it's now back in the hands of the people to listen to the information or not. Not the platform, not the government, not the corporate influences, but the people themselves. We have to build what we want. If we want a better society, we have to do it by our example of ourselves. We have to take the initiative. We have to create the world we want to live in.
Well, I come up with a crazy idea, and I'm sure somebody else probably already had the idea. What's to stop the people from starting their own form of a corporation to where we actually build our own internet? See, by ourselves, I may only have a dollar in my pocket, but I had a couple people with me. Now I got a couple dollars in my pocket. If we put that money towards, we're already paying for internet service anyway, let's buy our own doggone internet service and we make our own rules. You see what I'm saying?
It's well, that's exactly what we did with Synthesis. Synthesis is Facebook without Facebook.
Yeah, that's what we need then.
Oh, it's already here.
Yeah, but for that, the people will have to understand that there's a few steps that needs to be implemented, which is first, understanding that the freedom has a price. And our friend right now, Gary, is a good example of that, because he's living in a minus 18 degrees house. So that's the price of freedom.
Yeah.
And that's what people don't want to hear. They want to hear that they have rights. They don't want to hear that they have duties. And one of the duties is to be self-efficient, to educate yourself, to act with integrity, to have honor, to raise above and beyond your limits, and those are your duty. Like, and those hasn't been really explained to our society. Why? Because we only focused on the right. Why? Because the back in the day, 200 years ago, the duty were the job of religion. And the religion was there to give you the duty. But now that the duty and the religion fell apart, we still haven't readjusted the paradigm that, yes, you have right, but you also have duty. And the duty is to be a good person. The duty is to take care of each other. The duty is about, like, getting action based on integrity, value, wisdom, and all that. And so the people, like we never taught them that they had to behave this way. Therefore, they behave like kids, because this is what kids are doing. Like, they think that they have rights because they didn't still understood that they have duty. And that's what adults are about. And we live in a society today where the adults forgot that, yes, you have rights, but you also have duty. Yeah. And the first duty is that you need to be sure that when you're going to die, you're going to let a better place than the one you found it.
Yeah.
And it's not happening today because people don't care about that, because they only care about their rights.
Well, me.
Roman,
it's about me. Indeed, yeah. Exactly. So in social synthesis, we thought about different ways that will implement new concepts and new ideas in the structure of social synthesis. So this will slowly educate people about many different things. The RIC is one of them. The RIC is one of them. Speaking but there's many that, other ways, like how can we, for example, allow people to make money, to earn residual income without any counterparts, just by because they are human beings and we deserve to receive income just because we're human beings. But in the meantime, we don't want them to starting to make millions of dollars without doing anything, because this will guarantee to make them assholes. Because we're all here thinking that we're going to do great things when we're going to have money, but the fact is that when we get that money, like, the ego is stepping out and starting to take over and starting to do, I need more bigger. Like, basically, I need a bigger house, I need a bigger car, I need a bigger account, I need a bigger wife, I need a bigger whatever. And we need to get away from that mindset, understanding that we need to bring wisdom in that space. Yeah. Like, capitalism is a good thing, but it doesn't have to end up in globalism. Socialism is a great thing, but it doesn't have to end up in communism. So we need now to find a balance between capitalism and socialism, and find a fine-tuned balance between what people receive every month and how much they give back to the world. And that's what social synthesis is going to provide, a system that will allow people to get enough to get out of that survival mode, which is something that is destroying our whole mindset and our whole energy, because it's forcing us to fight against each other to survive, especially when the people in charge are the one controlling the money production, the work production. They are the one who, like, just by moving cursors can destroy your life or increase your well-being. So we need first to fix that situation by allowing people to generate residual income without doing anything, and then teaching them how good it is to give back, how good it is to be powerful in this society by allowing others to thrive through your generosity and through whatever action you can put toward goods on the planet.
All right, folks.
So the ambition is big, but I think we found quite a good scenario that is making a lot of sense, that is quite different from anything that we experienced so far in social media. But that's the point. If we are repeating again the same mistakes, how can we create a better future? We need to think out of the box. We need to experiment new concepts, new ideas, new paradigm, and see how humans who put into the system get better or worse.
I agree. Look, before we move on, somebody, Anon 6674 in the chat room, said, can someone ask Roman if there is a link to RIC information we can grab, and wants to know if you can post a link that we can then share with all the chat room so that they can read more about what you're talking about.
Like, if they want to find me, they can go on Facebook. My page, not my personal page, but my Facebook page is called RIC, RIC, Referendum Initiated by the Citizens, Roman Light. That's how they can find me. Normally, it's you can access it, even if it's hard. And then I have a YouTube channel as well, where I put all the videos that I made, all the interviews, all the live, so people can listen to probably like 30, 30 hours worth of reflection about the different topics, the different approach, the different perspective that people need to integrate in regards to understanding what the RIC is truly and how they can start to implement it into their life, into their society, into their habits, because it's about re-empowering people. It's about getting the responsibility to make the decisions and not just waiting for others to decide for ourselves.
Yeah.
Let me ask you again. It's RIC, referendum initiated by the
citizens.
And
I'll post his link for his Facebook group in the chat, and you guys can post it into the YouTube chat or wherever.
I'm in the process of posting it into the chat room, but I'm at great. Far as the citizens. What's next?
It's
Roman light.
Okay.
All right, folks, it's that time again. Time to go around the table, get everybody's last words of wisdom and such. And once again, been another very interesting show. So, you know, I like this time and I hate this time at the same time because we usually got a whole lot more to say and not enough really time to do it. But you know the
and on YouTube, if people want to listen to all the podcasts and videos that I made and interviews, it's referendum initiated by the citizens. Rick. Cool. So same in YouTube. You can subscribe to my channel because I think soon I'm going to have to shut down my Facebook account because Facebook is blocking me way too much and it's just a waste of energy to work with them. So I'm going to move into YouTube and into Social Synthesis only.
Well, also there's other platforms out there. I'm using Twitch. That's one of the live streams you can do. But anyway, folks, look, there are solutions available. I like what Roman's talking about. I like it, the fact that the citizens taking back control. The We the People is actually part of the mainstream dialogue now, that kind of deal. But we got to support each other in order to get this going on. Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and all these different social media platforms out there, they have people behind them that give them money that... you know, they got certain agendas, and so they want to try to suppress these words that we're trying to say. So in order for us to get these words and his message, our message, out to everybody else who needs to hear this message, we rely on you to take your few seconds out of your life and pass that down the line to somebody else who you think needs to hear it, you know? That's how we get the word out. You know, maybe one of these days we won't have access to this this thing we call the internet. Maybe one of these days we won't have access to all this information. So what I'm saying is we're standing at a crossroads right now. We have to make a big decision on where we want our world to go. Where we want, what do we want to leave behind for our children? We've got all the solutions. We have access to all this knowledge and technology. If we don't use it now wisely, we may lose it. And eventually, if the internet ever does go down, the internet that comes back up is not going to be the one you want. It's not going to be the one you can trust. If there's only one source of news out there, then you're only getting what you're told by those that you decide that you want to be your leaders of this world. And so far, their track record stinks because propaganda here in the United States is actually, it's actually legal to propagandize the public. And so with that said, if you can't trust what the man on TV is saying, and if you can't trust what the man on the radio is saying, you might as well just shut that thing off and talk to your neighbors, because they're probably going to know just about as much as you do. We're going to have to fix this world, you know, otherwise we're going to leave a dump behind for our children. I got some really beautiful grandchildren that I'd really love to have, you know, them have a long, fruitful life and be able to enjoy some things and maybe in a better state of affairs than what we've had to contend with. So with that said, it's time to go around the table. Rick, since you're the newest knight of the round table, we're going to let you go first and work our way around the table for some last words of wisdom before we got to get up out of here.
I think you meant that Roman.
Yeah, that was for Roman.
Oh, Roman, yeah. Sorry. That's my brain, Roman. I called him Rick. Sorry, folks. All right, go ahead, Roman.
Roman, last thoughts?
Any last words of wisdom?
Last thoughts about what? About,
life.
Your last thoughts.
I guess what the universe is trying to do like is writing history. I think this is what's happening. We are writing history. We are not measuring yet the impact of what has started 3 months ago is going to have over the world. Like, I realize it because I realize it from the day one, because I felt that this was completely new. It was completely different. It wasn't pushed by political parties. It wasn't pushed by unions. It wasn't pushed by individual trying to have their own agenda. It was pushed by the poor people starting to reconnect and become human again and doing something that they haven't done for years, which is to, yes, speak to your fellows, brothers and sisters. And this is what the system tried to avoid for years, like dividing. And if we win in that space, like, we already won. It's just a question of time. Now, what we're going to bring after that is going to be an earthquake. That's how I feel it from day one. It's going to be an earthquake that's going to have consequences all over the world, because France isn't just a tiny country. It's a country that has a lot of responsibility, that has a lot of reputation. And if something big is happening in France, it's going to spread across the world the way it's happening already. So, like, just be careful, guys, because this is not just an insignificant event. As I said many times, the difference between the Yellow Vest and Occupy, for example, is that Occupy didn't bring any solution, where we bring that solution, the RIC, which is based on 10 years worth of research, and this is significant.
Well, if you had some advice for folks, what would be your advice? Not so much from a Yellow Vest, but from the situation.
My only single advice is always to educate yourself, but not only educate yourself on what makes you feel comfortable. Educate yourself on every perspective, on what people that agree with you think, but also what people who disagree with you think, and do that for everything in your life, like politically, economically, historically, physically, religiously, whatever paradigm that you get access to. Like, educate yourself, know yourself. That's the key point. If you don't know who you are, if you don't know, like, what the essence of the substance of the being that is inside of you, then you cannot comprehend the world and you cannot interact with the world. So it's all about, like, finding and understanding that the only single enemy that exists is our belief systems. And the only way to get rid of our belief systems is to look at others' perspective. So when you understand others' perspective, your belief system disappear or expand, because you understand not only your perspective, but others' perspective. And therefore, your belief system had to readjust. So that's my point.
Well said. Jerry, last thoughts? Barbara, last thoughts? Oops.
Well, I'd like to step in and thank everyone for being here today. Great conversations. And you know me, I always say, I think we're in an extraordinary, awesome moment in our timeline of history of humanity. I feel the prophecy is unfolding. The prophecy of the people rising, the Rainbow Warriors, it's called. We're all peoples of color coming together to stand in unity. And I think that it's not just about jobs, it's not just about rights and so on. I think the key piece I'm going to say is about our connectedness as a great family, greater family, and the Mother Earth, all of the resources that feed us and that we need, and to not exclude or not forget that, yes, the government and all these circumstances are very important about how this will benefit all the people for the good of the whole. But let us not forget the water. Let us not forget the air and the food and all this that is so essential to life. And in our way, it was always everything that we did today, we considered how it would affect and reflect upon our coming generations. And the seven generations. So I think we are in time of prophecy unfolding, which is extraordinary. And the prophecy of leaving the fourth world of chaos, the nightmare that we have been inundated with for so long, people are awakening to, and we are entering into that fifth world, the thousand years of peace, which is the time of enlightenment, like the light within, the spirit within, the awakening of the people. And to know that we are together, we're all brothers and sisters, no matter where you are in this world. And you're right, what goes on over there, across the big waters, is going to flow throughout the whole of the world. So were there, you know, with you in support of our people, of all people, for the goodness of the whole, and numerous blessings to you all. And that's, I say, get right with your spiritual connection, the light within you and who you really truly are. So I agree with you on that. Ilamaya, Doksha.
I love this show. So what about you, Barry?
Well, you know what? I'm honored, folks, to be sitting in this room with all these great minds. I really am. I sit back and I listen to what's being said here today. And boy, if we could embrace some of the solutions that we've talked about here in the last couple hours, guys, it would really make a monumental change. We really do have to look kind of, I look at my legacy right now and what I'm leaving for my children. And I see a world that's being destroyed, and we have all the answers to fix it. But we have to embrace them. If we don't, our children, really, I've said this many times, our children are going to curse us, because we know, we see what's going on around us, we understand the implications for the future, and what it's going to leave for our children. And me, I look at children now, I can walk through a mall and start crying when I look at a child.
I'm cursing, Barry.
And boy, I'll tell you, if the fact that we are talking about leaving a planet that's just going to be a pile of poop for our children, and if that doesn't impact your life and get you busy and get you involved in stopping this madness, I don't know what to say to you. My thoughts to you guys, it's been an honor and a pleasure sitting here, and love what's been going on. Great show, and thanks for coming in, Roman. Awesome input, my friend.
Thanks again, Barry and Roman. How about you, Gary? You got any last words of wisdom?
I'm a believer that you got to be constant in life, and in that theme, I'm going to say what I always say. To make these changes in life, people, you just got to be the example you want to see. Lead by example. Don't look for a hero. Don't look for a leader. Don't look for a white knight. Be that guy. Look in the mirror. And there's your answer right there. So if you claim to be a patriot, you claim to be an earth lover, you claim to be this, you claim to be that, well then get up and do it. Be that guy. Be that girl. Be that person. And make the changes. Because if you're waiting for somebody else to do it for you, well, look around. That's what waiting does.
Yeah.
We're not going to solve these issues waiting for the government or the corporation or the philanthropist or whatever. You know, you need to really be the example you want to see. So if you want to change stuff, change stuff. You just might inspire somebody else to do the same.
Amen.
Oh, yeah. And well FYF, by the way. FYF as well. That's my other thing.
Well said. Well, folks, you've been listening to the Knights of the Round Table. I hope if anything inspires you whatsoever about today's show, that you copy the link to the podcast, share it with somebody, download it for future reference, you know, chop it up, put it on your own show or whatever. This whole site is free. Everything on this is free. You should be free. Energy should be free. As far as I'm concerned, we were gifted everything necessary to resolve every single problem under the sun. The only issue that we got is whether or not we're going to realize our true potential and take all those solutions and make it so. If we want a beautiful world, we have to be the ones to make it so. Otherwise, we leave behind a world to our future generations that's going to be probably a lot worse than what we've had to deal with. We were kind of fortunate, if you really think about it, that we've actually been able to enjoy these luxuries of life, and I want to see everyone in every single nation be able to do the same. So I'm going to do my little part on my side of the world over here. I'm going to keep on working on alternative energy things for people and sharing information. And I'm going to get out there in my community, and I'm going to be hands-on. I'm going to do my Bottle Caps for Mad Science bucket campaign and see how far I can take that. If I can inspire the children to want to do things like that and be creative, then I think I've done my job. I think I've done my part. I'm only one person, just like each one of you is only one person. So you're not going to be able to tackle the world by yourself. You're not going to be able to shoulder the burdens of the entire planet or whatever you think we're on by yourself. You're going to have to get out there and use your light to inspire others to do the same. And when you start to see these things work out in your communities, and the neighbors will see their community next door looking good, they're going to more than that want to follow what you're doing, because what you're doing is going to work for you. And that's because you, the people, are that miracle that you've been waiting for. So with that said, peace and love.
Let me interject one thing before you go, please, Shazoo.
Yeah, go ahead, brother.
Roman, please take time and go to Shazoo's pages. Go look at his Neodymium Accelerator. If you want to see something that will make an unbelievable change in our world, I absolutely urge you to go look at Shazoo's and what he's doing. This man has got a lot of the answers that we need right now. So
just
go
to put it out
and
there.
Share it around.
Just out there. Roman and Shaz actually definitely should talk, because Roman himself has also went down that path of free energy or natural energy. They've created an engine over there in France. They also have worked with others who have done this. So you would have an immense conversation between Shaz and Roman.
Jeez, let's get that going, guys.
Great. I'd like to invite Roman to come back, because he's been a good, honorable knight of the round table, and we need more knights of the round table. See,
I have to say that I love the way Creator works.
Wasn't it amazing, Barbara?
Yep.
Isn't it amazing, this connection that we're seeing right now? And yep. The energy we feel in this room, the vibration I'm feeling right now, just touches your heart, buddy.
I thought that was just gas.
No, it's not gas, Gary. There's something going on here that's really cool.
Seriously, though, this round
I thought that was very important, what I said, just said. Okay, I guess it
was. It was. It was awesome.
It absolutely was.
There's always that little comment in there, but
I'm just a bad person.
You got to take it with a grain of salt, but anyways, we know it was coming from the right place.
Tim, right.
All right, folks.
This has been awesome.
We really got to get out of here, but one last thing I want to say about this whole Knights of the Round Table concept. It's kind of like what Rick is all about, what Roman's doing out there with all his people. This round table is out here in cyberspace. It's ever expanding. We can grow this thing. We can make it large enough to... this table will never get too small. And if we can bring all of our people around the table and work out all these things we need to fix, together we can get it done. Because by ourselves we may not have every tool that we need, but together we got every single resource available. We got every single bit of talent available. These people that's sitting here on this round table right now, I can't say enough about them, except that I love every single one of them with everything I got, because these folks, they see what I see, and they want to make the world a better place. And that's a whole positive pebble in the pond. May have started off with one little crazy concept, but it ended up being what it is today, and it's been a wonderful show. And I am truly honored and extremely humbled to be here with these wonderful people and the folks that show up in these chat rooms and share information with each other. That's what the Knights of the Round Table is all about. That's what I believe Rick is all about. And that's what I believe all these other things that all these different people, good people of the world, standing up and deciding, instead of waiting around for actions to happen, they're going to get up and they're going to make it. So we're going to make our world better, one positive pebble at a time. Peace and love, everybody. You've been listening to the Knights of the Round Table.
And that stood up to me.
Yeah, but we can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just one hand.
Ooh.
One hand.
Yeah, you're right. It's just one hand.
Yeah, boss. They're puny.
Puny? Say, let's pretend this brain is a puny little ant.
Did that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this? You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up. Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life. It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay? What is the dream? The dream is to bring brilliant minds from every nation together to solve the world's problems, one positive pebble at a time. It will be we, the people of the world, that bring about true change, peace, and love to all. Governments never solve any problem, only create them. Wars, starvation, sickness, oppression, financial slavery, death and destruction is what governments do best. When all the military might of nations is used to destroy other nations, the question has to be asked, why not use that military strength for good? Feed the hungry, shelter the homeless, heal the sick, and so forth. True representation of truth, freedom, and justice comes from we the people, and it never came from slick-talking politicians that say whatever they have to get elected, and then regulate away your freedoms. There is no reason to have starving babies in the world of today. Yet, it goes on. There's no reason for wars and sickness, yet it continues. We as the people must stop feeding that beast that is eating humanity alive. We the people of all nations have the power to bring about a literal heaven on earth. You as an individual have more power than you can possibly imagine. You have the power of the spoken word. You have the power of the pen. The power of action, and most of all, the power of love. It is time to use this power to make our world a better place. We are the founding fathers, mothers, sisters, and brothers of our children, and of our children's children's future. Into the future and beyond, what we do today will define the world that they live in tomorrow. Let us, from every nation, come together and make that future a great one.
Woman! Man, sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice.
And how'd you get that, eh?
By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma, which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help, I'm being repressed,
bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. We dance where we're able. We do routines and all the scenes of bookwork impeccable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are more mid-table. stabbing hella, greasing from the diaphragm.
I have to push the pram along.
No, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
To serve the turbo and the Knights of the Round Table.